Father, get out of here. Could my colleagues take their seats, please? Good evening. My name is Mark Laredo, Counselor at Large from Ward 7, and I'm Chair of the Land Use Committee. This is a regularly scheduled meeting of the Land Use Committee, and tonight we're going to continue our deliberations on what is commonly known as the Orr Building Project. It is 180-16 parens, two closed parens, and 179-16. The first is for a change of zone. The second is for the Orr Street development special permit. We, as many of you know, have been treating these as a single matter for the purpose of hearing. I'm going to take a moment to introduce my colleagues, staff, go over our procedure for the evening. We're going to get started right away. I intend to finish no later than 10 o'clock this evening, as is our custom. We are being audio-taped and videotaped, courtesy of New TV, so if you're going to come up and speak, make sure you smile for the cameras. We want to make sure we all look good. Let me quickly introduce my colleagues. Just getting seated is Counselor at Large Deb Cosley, Counselor at Large from Ward 5, and a member of the committee. Next to her is my colleague from Ward 7, Ruth Ann Fuller, Counselor at Large, not a member of the committee. Behind Counselor Cosley is our Counselor Barbara Bruzal Glaser. She is a Ward Counselor from Ward 3, not a member of the committee. To my immediate right is Counselor Jake Auchincloss, Counselor at Large from Ward 2 and a member of the committee. Behind him is Counselor Scott Lennon, President of the City Council, Counselor at Large from Ward 1 and a member of the committee. Next to Counselor Lennon is Counselor Lyle Baker, President Emeritus of the City Council, Ward Counselor from Ward 7, not a member of the committee. Next to him is Counselor Greg Schwartz, Counselor at Large from Ward 6, the Vice Chair of the committee. And next to Counselor Schwartz is Counselor Emily Norton, Ward Counselor from Ward 2, not a member of the committee. Of course, all my colleagues who are not members are always more than welcome to attend our proceedings. We have Peter Dorringer representing the Planning and Development Board. They are not meeting here as a formal meeting, but he's correct as serving as a representative. Is that accurate? And then to my far right is Rita Young from the Legal Department. Next door is Robert Roddick, also from the Legal Department. Next to Mr. Roddick is Alexander Anant from the Planning Department. And next to Ms. Anant is Nadia Khan, our committee clerk. We've also been joined by Jonathan Yeo, who is the other member of the subcommittee that's following our proceedings. So, protocol for this evening. We're going to begin with Ms. Anant, who, due to the press of time last time, did not have an opportunity to present a Planning Department perspective on what we've heard to date. There have been some Planning Department perspectives, but she's going to provide an update. How long do you think you'll be, Ms. Anant? 10 minutes, perhaps. From there, I'm going to hear from the petitioners and their counsel. They are going to present some updated plans that we've all received in our packets, should be available online. I think we all did get a set of plans, is that correct, as well, that were left at our desk. There were some memoranda that were included in our materials. We're going to hear from them. I do not expect that they will be more than, say, 25 minutes or half an hour at the most. Then we're going to open it up to public comment. I know there was a group from, Mr. Harrington had asked for some time, extra time. I'll provide that to the Newtonville group. But as we, is our protocol, I ask you when you come to the podium, it's very simple. You state your name, you state your address, and you try to keep your remarks to 3 minutes or less. And I'm going to keep track of time only because we have a very large group of people. And it's very important that each and every one of you who wants to speak gets heard. We listen very carefully. At the same time, we want to make sure that everyone gets heard. And we also want to make sure that we're not deliberating at midnight. I feel personally very strongly that not much good happens in public government at midnight or later. And if we're all out of here at 10 o'clock or so, we're going to be really able to focus our efforts. We'll all be able to go home to our families and be ready for the next day. And so I'm going to urge you to keep your remarks to 3 minutes or less. Two other things of note. One, the public hearing is going to stay open. So if you do not speak this evening, you don't have an opportunity to speak this evening, there'll be later opportunities to do so. And second, we always entertain a written comment. Written comment is very easy. You can do it by regular mail if you want, but I think almost everybody these days does it via email. It's directed to Nadia Khan, our committee clerk. She then ensures that all of us get the emails. I can assure you we get the emails. We get lots of emails. They are very helpful. And so if you want to either reinforce something you've said this evening or want to speak separately on an issue or want to go on at great length, please feel free to do so in writing. So with that, Ms. Anant, you want to start us off this evening? Would you prefer to speak up here? Great. Go ahead.
Great. So tonight I have a few comments that I want to make about the most recent plan set, summarize where we are on the traffic impact analysis and mitigation, and wrap up any last questions about the change of zone request. From the planning department's perspective, this project really comes down to connecting the site to the rest of Newtonville and mitigating traffic impacts. This is the sixth public hearing on this project, and I want to use tonight to address these particular issues and come up with any final questions for the next hearing, which I anticipate being the last hearing that involves presentations before we can move on to crafting a draft council order for a vote. Overall, I think the petitioner's team has done a good job of listening and responding to comments from the public, the council, the planning department, and the Urban Design Commission. As has been noted, the current site is not particularly inviting and does not offer much visually to the city or village now. There are a number of vacant and underutilized buildings on the site, and the buildings have been left to deteriorate for many years. With the exception of the Boston Ballet and Newton Camera, and no offense to my wonderful Taylor, the current uses on site do not contribute to Newtonville as a destination or generate much pedestrian activity, and the majority of the existing buildings don't contribute to the sense of place or add to the connection with the rest of Newtonville. My sense from the applicant is that in designing the project, they had three design objectives: to create new high-quality destination commercial space on the ground floor that add to the village, including new retail and dining options; to locate smaller, single-floor, one- and two-bedroom units above this retail, increasing housing choices for Newton residents; and to connect their site to the rest of Newtonville through pedestrian and streetscape enhancements, contextual architecture, and a new plaza for community gatherings. For the most part, the applicant has designed the first story to meet the purposes of the mixed-use four zoning district, which include an active, pedestrian-oriented streetscape throughout the day and week with multiple store entrances and window transparency. The first floor of the building is proposed to contain approximately 40,000 square feet of commercial uses, currently divided into 8 retail commercial spaces, ranging in size from 1,600 square feet to 13,000 square feet, plus 2 entrances for the residential lobbies. The ground level is proposed as masonry materials with precast concrete trims and bases. This is substantial enough to give it a real presence on the street, yet there will be lots of glazing with a metal storefront window system and approximately 6 entrances on Washington Street and 4 entrances on Walnut Street, which will help to keep the active streetscape environment. In addition to the masonry, cement siding and metal panels will be mixed in as well to add depth to the facade. The Urban Design Commission reviewed the design of the project late this fall and found that the applicant had addressed many of their original concerns, including breaking up the massing on the Walnut Street side of the project and stepping down the height as the building approaches the residential neighborhood, creating a pedestrian connection from Walnut Street to the inner plaza, and creating a strong division between the public ground floor and private residences above. The Washington Street sidewalk is now proposed at between 14 and 22 feet wide, and has been and the Walnut Street sidewalk has been widened to between 14.5 feet and almost 20 feet wide. The petitioner has added a pedestrian passageway that will connect pedestrians from Walnut Street into the site, similar to the existing passageways on Walnut Street south of the pike. This passageway will lead to the approximately 2,000 square foot community room space on the second floor, and because there are doors to this passageway, there's an opportunity to program the walls of this space with art or murals. In my memo for the September meeting, I talked about a rule of thumb that a sense of appropriate enclosure is achieved with an approximate ratio of building height to street width at a 1-to-1. Now, this isn't a hard and fast rule, but it's a generally accepted principle of urban design that's a good starting point. And this principle tells us that with Walnut Street being 60 feet wide and Washington Street being 80 feet wide, that putting 5 stories at this intersection will feel comfortable to the average person on the street. 60 feet is often understood as the distance a person can generally see and still recognize another person, and it's also the point where you can still pick up architectural details. Another reason that 5 stories might be the right number is that it emphasizes the corner more and gives the corner sufficient height to help tie it to the other side of the village and to the buildings, other buildings, such as the tall brick building directly across Walnut Street, 246 Walnut Street, as well as the church office building at 288 Walnut Street and the Masonic Temple across the Turnpike. Emphasizing the corner tells you that you've arrived in Newtonville, and it highlights that this intersection is an important place. I would note that the 5th story is also set back for portions of the building and will be minimally perceptible at the street level. Furthermore, the setbacks of the 5th story create some great residential units that are more interesting and livable with balconies and garden terraces. I also like that the 5th story creates a sort of vanishing roofline that's a very nice design element. Since the A and B versions of the plans that the developer presented at the last meeting, the developer has significantly shortened the length of the building along Washington Terrace, pulling it back from the Foster Street residence on this side of the site. The setbacks are 45 feet to the nearest distance of the rear lot line, and they increase to 90 feet, where 20 feet is the minimum requirement. No significant changes have been made to the interior plaza. It's still approximately 9,000 square feet and envisioned to include outdoor seating where people can come to eat, drink, socialize, and shop. This plan shows that the 5th floor has been removed from the end wings of the building and keeps the mass on Washington Street away from the Foster Street residence. The city has had a peer review of the applicant's traffic study to review the methodology and assumptions used and confirm that the traffic study conforms to industry standards and best engineering practices. The study reviewed the proposed mitigation of the new traffic signal and pedestrian improvement and confirmed the analysis that the proposed mitigation will be an improvement over existing conditions, even with the project. The petitioner has made their traffic simulation available to the public and counselors on 3 evenings. The applicant is working on a detailed transportation demand management plan, which will focus on incentivizing residents, employees, and visitors to use transit, ride-sharing, walking, and biking so that alternatives to driving are encouraged and promoted. This plan will be submitted for the December 15th meeting, and it's my understanding from the applicant that we might get a preview of their plan tonight. The planning department has encouraged the petitioner to consider a robust plan with a menu of options and incentives. Specific measures we expect to be included include decoupling the parking from the rent, charging a higher amount for any second parking stall rented by residents, subsidizing MBTA passes and other memberships, such as bike and car share memberships, and gift cards that can be used for Uber or Lyft or other similar services. The petitioner has agreed to provide space on site for a bike share station and contribute to the city to help kick off our bike share program, and also to include provisions for electric car charging stations and to submit annual surveys to the city so that we can measure the effectiveness of the petitioner's CDM. The proponent has committed to geometric and signal upgrades at the Washington and Walnut Street intersection. The modifications include restriping the Walnut Street southbound approach to include two travel lanes, plus a bicycle lane, and parking on both sides of the street. We agree with the proposal to install curb extensions, as this will enhance the pedestrian crossings by decreasing their length. It's also important to note that the petitioner is working with both the Planning Department and the Department of Public Works to make sure that the proposed improvements to Walnut Street, south of the turnpike, will be continued over the turnpike to Foster Street by the developer to help connect both areas of Newtonville. It's anticipated that a representative from the Public Works Department will be available for the next hearing to discuss the coordination of improvements to the Newtonville-Walnut Street corridor in further detail. As part of the proposed mitigation for the project, the petitioner will reconstruct the intersection and install new modern traffic signals capable of multiple timing and phasing sequences in order to adjust operations throughout the day as conditions change. Other priorities for the city include pedestrian improvements and bike lanes on both sides of Walnut Street connecting over the turnpike, a robust transportation demand management plan, a contribution to Newton's future bike fare program, and improvements to the south side of Washington Street from Lowell Avenue to Walnut Street. The petitioner is seeking a rezoning from the business zone to the mixed-use 4 zone. When considering a request to rezone the site, the council must consider if the proposed zone change promotes the public welfare and is consistent with the city's comprehensive plan and the council's vision for the area. The mixed-use 4 zone has a clearly stated purpose that's included in the zoning ordinance. The zone was written to encourage mixed-use development in village centers adjacent to transit services, to foster pedestrian-oriented villages, and to allow sufficient density and intensity of uses to promote a lively environment. Expanding the diversity of housing options available in the city where it makes the most sense was also a consideration in creation of the MU4 zone. Why did the city wish to encourage mixed-use development? In general, mixed-use development embodies smart growth principles and promotes efficient use of land and infrastructure by guiding development towards established areas where developments will have the least amount of negative impacts and where impacts are minimized to the greatest extent possible. Mixed-use development can enhance traditional village centers with a mix of new commercial uses that typically enhance the variety of businesses that serve the community while preserving the traditional feel of the village center. They provide more housing opportunities and choices, helping to keep our community diverse and affordable, and they reduce auto dependency, auto congestion, and air pollution by co-locating multiple destinations into one site. Both zones require special permits for development of more than 20,000 square feet of new gross floor area. The business zone allows for 2 stories of development by right and up to 4 stories with a special permit. The floor area ratio allowed is just under 250,000 square feet of total development by special permit in the business zone. The mixed-use 4 zone allows for 3 stories by right and up to 5 stories by special permit. The FAR allows for a total development size of up to 310,000 square feet by special permit. Both zones generally allow for the same uses, so there's no difference in the types of uses allowed. The real difference in the 2 zones comes down to the maximum number of units that can be built on site. Under the business zone, because of the lot area per unit minimum requirement, a maximum of 103 units can be built on the development site. The lot area per unit requirement under the mixed-use 4 zone is lower and is also waivable by special permit. So although the site allows for 123 units under this zone, the council can allow for additional density if it feels the site is appropriate, that the waiver will encourage smaller unit sizes in keeping with Newton's housing needs and would help to achieve the density envisioned to promote the lively and sustainable mixed-use environment the city is seeking. The developer is proposing a 4-to-5-story building with 164 units. The total gross square footage of the project is approximately 225 square feet, which equates to an FAR of 1.8. So the gross square footage would be allowed under both zones. The residential component equates to an average unit size of 870 square feet and a lot area per unit of approximately 750 square feet. The Planning Department has consistently noted our support for the request to rezone the site to MU4 for all of the reasons that the zone was created for. The project is located in the village center, close to multiple transit options, will significantly enhance the safety and accessibility of the pedestrian environment, and will encourage the use of alternative modes of transportation and increase housing choice. The proposed density is appropriate for a village center, and its location will help to minimize the impact of new housing units while helping to sustain a vibrant village center. The proposed project will add more amenities and points of interest to the village, help knit Newtonville together with an improved streetscape and gathering place, and will add 24 affordable and 17 moderate income units for a total of 41 permanently deed restricted units. The city's comprehensive plan presents a vision for moderate, controlled growth that calls for enhancing the vitality of Newton's village centers. The MU4 district was written to specifically encourage denser mixed-use development in village centers, and the city has numerous studies documenting the need for increased housing choice and the area's potential to absorb new retail development. The site is identified as a priority site in the city's housing strategy, and the petitioner is exceeding the city's inclusionary zoning requirement with the addition of 10% moderate income units that would be restricted in perpetuity. It's expected that the next meeting on this project will be either December 15th or January 12th. We're going to talk about that tonight. This meeting should wrap up the project presentations and deal with any outstanding items. Outstanding issues expected to be discussed include a final plan for the inclusionary and moderate income units, presentation of the applicant's transportation demand management plan, and a summary of the mitigation and benefits of the project. The Department of Public Works will also give an update of the Newtonville Streetscape Improvement Project. The Planning and Development Board's recommendation on the request for a zone change may also be discussed. I expect that subsequent meetings will be focused on drafting a council order. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Anand. I'm sure my colleagues have some questions that they will want to ask you later. I know I have at least several. But let me take a moment to introduce a few colleagues who've come into the room. Then I know that State Representative Kay Kahn is here. Are you here, Representative Kahn? And I know she wants to address us and has another meeting to attend, so I'm going to go out of order, let her proceed first and turn to the developer. I think four other colleagues have joined us. To my left is Councilor Jay Harney, Ward Councilor from Ward 4, member of the committee. Directly in front of me is Councilor Brian Yates, Councilor at Large from Ward 5, not a member of the committee. To my immediate right is Councilor Rick Lipoff, Councilor at Large from Ward 8, and a member of the committee. And between Councilors Norton and Schwartz is Councilor Allison Leary, Ward Councilor from Ward 1, not a member of the committee. Representative Kahn, if you'd like to come up and provide any comments you have, that'd be great. Good evening.
Good evening. Thank you very much for taking me out of turn. My name is Carrie Kahn. I live at 18 St. Mary Street in Newton, Lower Falls. And I'm pleased to be here this evening just to mention a few things that that I've been working on, which I think relate to the development that we're talking about this evening. One of my top priorities as the state representative, I represent the 11th Middlesex District, which includes Newtonsville, West Newton, Newton Lower Falls, Auburndale, Newton Corner, and parts of Newton Center, really the north side of the city. And during my many years in the state legislature, one of my top priorities has really been related to the commuter rails, the three commuter rail stations that travel through the city of Newton. And the first stop when it enters Newton from the west is the Auburndale station, the Auburndale commuter station, which is a vital development for many residents of the city of Newton. And I'm pleased to announce this evening, although it's already been in the newspaper, in the tab, that the Auburndale station has been included in the final FY 2017, FY 2021 capital investment plan, which means essentially that the funding is now available and the station will be converted to, there will be a new station, it will be on the entrance will be from the village in Auburndale, and it will be done over the next 5 years, and the station will be accessible for all individuals. This is a big step forward, and I'm very pleased that this is happening. But in the wake of the Auburndale station, I want to really press upon all of you that I'm also very much interested in seeing us do the same thing with the West Newton station and the Newtonville station. And I think with the development potential here, we'll see many more people that will be wanting to use the commuter rail station. And I think there's a lot of reasoning at this point that all three stations should be done at the same time. So I've been working with the Department of Transportation and individuals here in the city and the developers to see what we can do going forward to, in fact, get the three stations on track over the next several years. And I'm encouraged that there are a lot of people that have an interest in this. And I know people have had this interest for a long time, but I think we're in a situation at the moment where this could be, we could move forward with this in a positive way. I think the addition of more housing will be, in fact, beneficial, although I think it'll take some time before we will see a change in the service. I know the service is something that's very important to all of the residents of Newton. They want to make sure we have enough service going into Boston, so that's something that we're working on at the same time. And I do think that an increase in numbers of folks that will be using the station will, in fact, probably make us move in the direction of really taking a look at the service so that it provides more for residents as they travel into Boston. So I'm very excited about the possibilities. It's been a long time coming. I have really stayed with it with the Auburndale station, and very pleased that this has been added to the capital improvement plan, and we'll be working diligently over the next several months to see if we can, in fact, get these other two stations in the line so that they can also benefit from what we're going to be doing in Auburndale. So the goal, of course, is to have all three stations accessible. It's very hard to get down those stairs. I've counted them myself. There are 44 steps, I think, to get down to the station, and we want to make it accessible and also safer for folks who are standing at the station waiting to get on the train. So there's a lot of work ahead. We've had some good examples of some public-private possibility partnerships. We see the New Balance station down the way in Alston-Brighton, which is a public-private partnership. So we're taking a look at what we can do along those lines in relation to the West Newton and the Newtonville station. So I'm very excited about these possibilities. It's not something that I've got nothing spoken about in a big audience like this. So I want to thank you again for letting me just say a few words about the prospects for the future.
Well, thank you very much. Thank you very much, Representative Kahn. We on the City Council greatly appreciate your efforts. I think I speak for all my colleagues. We appreciate your efforts, both for the Auburndale station and for what you can do for us in the West Newton and Newtonville stations. As we've heard, at least in this committee, during the course of these proceedings, the revitalization of the Newtonville station, regardless of what happens with this project, is really very, very important to the citizens, not only of the immediate area, but really all of Newtonville, because the improved transit opportunities will be a benefit to the entire city. So thank you again for all of your efforts, and please let us know what we can do to assist you.
Thank you. I'm happy to answer questions if you...
Do any of my colleagues have questions for Representative Kahn at this time? I think we all know how to reach you, Representative Kahn. Thank you very much again. I appreciate the update. With that, Attorney Bookbinder, you want to tee it up?
Good evening, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, members of the planning board. For the record, my name is Stephen Bookbinder. I'm an attorney with the law firm of Schlesinger and Bookbinder, with offices at 1200 Walnut Street in Newton Highlands. As you will recall, when we last appeared before you on November 1st, we presented two schemes identified as Option A and Option B. Option A was a combination five-story, four-story design, while Option B was an all-four-story design. Option B, in reducing the height to four stories, had added mass to the rear of both the west building and the east building. When we asked for input from you respecting those two options, a majority seemed to express a preference for Option A. At the same time, we were also asked to consider our original scheme, which was essentially a combination five-story, four-story design with additional square footage. Those counselors who expressed a preference for Option A back on November 1st seemed to prefer more height on Washington Street with an increased rear setback to the Foster Street abutters at the West Building, coupled with a reduction in the massing at the rear of both the West Building and the East Building. The revised scheme, which we have submitted to you and which Damian will present tonight, essentially incorporates aspects of both Option A and the original proposal. With the submission, which we made at the end of last week, we also included a summary of sustainability measures, which you had requested. I think actually Councillor Crosley had suggested this, prepared by Lauren Bowman of New Ecology, Inc. And we also will have tonight, but didn't have in advance, the roof mapping plan, which had been requested. And we'll share that with you. We did not plan to have Lauren address that directly in the presentation, but she's here and happy to answer questions. Damian is also, after going through the design issues, going to walk you through a summary of the project benefits. And that will include features of the project itself, which we think are enhancements, as well as off-site mitigation measures in line with some of the comments which Ms. Anant has made. I also just wanted to address one other housekeeping item. As you may recall, back on November 1st, I reported to you that we had been in touch with the owner of the property at 891-897 Washington Street, respecting the post office. Both the owner of that property and its tenant, the United States Postal Service, had expressed concerns to us regarding the latter's use of Washington Terrace with the proposed project in place. Since that time, we've been working in close concert with the owner, the Postal Service, and their counsel, Marty Healy, who's here this evening and who I think you'll hear from perhaps later, in an effort to address those concerns and to provide appropriate mitigation measures which not only will assure continued access and egress for the Postal Service, but we believe actually will enhance that access and egress to a large degree. We've had several meaningful discussions with Mr. Healy as late as both yesterday afternoon and this morning, and we think that we've actually reached at least an agreement in principle on most of the major issues. You do know that Attorney Healy filed a letter with you this afternoon. We were a little surprised at the timing of the letter, but that said, we viewed it really as Attorney Healy reserving his client's rights. But we remain very optimistic that we'll reach a mutually satisfactory resolution of this matter. So with that in mind, I'm going to send this over to Damian.
Thank you. Just a quick suggestion. I certainly, on behalf of the committee, want to see whatever changes you've made. I think we've heard from you more than once what you perceive as the general benefits of this project. I think my colleagues are fairly well aware of those, so if you could focus the commentary on what you're doing different, I think that would be most helpful for us.
Sure, and in that regard, and just to be clear, we did discuss with Ms. Anant, we've thrown some things out there. What we really have tonight, and it's basically very concise, is the packaging of those items.
Fine.
Some have been thrown out, and there are some new ones.
That's fine. I just want to make sure we're not retreading old ground.
Great.
Good evening.
Hi, good evening. My name is Damian Chaviano with the petitioner. What I wanted to do is follow up on Steve's comment as it relates to the options that were presented at the November 1st land use hearing. As you can see here, what we did is we presented what we call option A, which was a 5- and 4-story scheme, and option B, which was a 4-story scheme. As part of our conversation with the counselors, the discussion came up as to whether or not we also wanted to have a discussion over our original filing. We thought it'd be helpful for everyone. There's been a lot of numbers that have been thrown around to put back on paper exactly what our filing entailed, as well as option A and option B, and how we got to our revised proposal that you now have in front of you. For those of you who remember, our original filing called for 238,000 gross square feet, 171 units, with a 15% affordable housing component, and a 90-foot setback to Foster Street along the Washington Terrace location. With option A and option B, what we tried to do was look at both density as well as massing. So as you can see, both option A and option B had a reduction of 10,000 square feet from our original filing and a reduction of approximately 10 units from the 171. As you know, we also increased under both scenarios our affordability from 15 to 25%, and we added 6 3-bedroom units under both plans. What we wanted to do was spark a debate about where massing was appropriate. And so under option A, what we did is we kept 5 stories, particularly along the Washington Street and Walnut Street locations. And option B, what we did is presented a scheme that dropped the entire project down to 4 stories. But in order to accommodate those schemes, we did the following. One, we moved the Foster Street setback along Washington Terrace to 45 feet. And under option B, the all 4-story scheme, what we did is we increased it by adding 2 bump outs, 72 feet along Foster Street and 34 feet respectively. What we heard at the land use hearing was an overwhelming push towards a reduction of massing along Foster Street. So what you have in front of you is a further reduction in overall density of approximately 2,000 square feet. We are working through a unit count as we speak. One of the comments that came from a counselor at the last hearing is whether or not we could go smaller on our average unit sizes. We're meeting with our marketing team this week to see if we can accommodate that, but you'll see a range of approximately 158 to 164 units. We stuck at the 25% affordability, which will net you either 40 or 41 units, depending on where we land for the overall number of units. Again, we've kept the 6 3-bedrooms, and what we've done, what we think is most important as part of the feedback that we ascertained, was we increased the setback of Foster Street to the original 90-foot proposal, and we eliminated the bump out. So to give you a sense of what that actually means, what we tried to do here is show you in plan form the 3 different schemes. What you see on the left, this is option A, which was the 5-story and 4-story scheme, option B, which was all 4 stories, and our current proposal, which calls for the 90-foot setback. What you can see here is originally we had a 5-story scheme along Walnut Street and the Washington Street corner. Our middle building called for 5 stories, and what we proposed on scheme A was 4 stories all the way back to Washington Terrace with a 45-foot setback. Under option B, what we did is we kept the same 45-foot setback, dropped the entire building or the entire project to 4 stories, and we added these 2 bump outs. This one here is 72 feet in size, this one here 34 feet. So if you look to your right, which is our revised proposal, as you can see, we've gone back to the 90-foot setback. We've eliminated the 2 bump outs. And what we've done is we've added a 5th level to the Washington Street corner. So this is Washington Terrace and Washington Street at that intersection. Part of the November 1st land hearing, or the Land Use Committee meeting, was a presentation by the Newtonville Area Council. And we ascertained a lot of really important feedback, particularly as it related to design. Sort of the regular themes that we heard were, one, a more interesting roof line. The commentary is what you see here that was presented on November 1st. The feedback was it was too flat. We were asked to consider a more pronounced tower at the corner of Washington and Walnut Street. And we were asked to revisit the facade materials, particularly along the West Building in Washington Terrace. What you see in front of you is our revised proposal. Starting with the tower, we spent a lot of time trying to pay attention to this detail. On the fifth floor, what you can see here are two setbacks that allow for further pronunciation of the tower. We've added a more pronounced cap and added an accent color to try to distinguish it. And in addition, what we've done is we've replaced the glass. This was one contiguous piece of glass. What we've done is tried to make it more symmetrical and more contiguous with the spaces below. What we've also done is we've adjusted our cornice lines so that they're accented in color. And what you'll see in a second along Walnut Street is we've added a dormer detail in addition to the setbacks. One of the other concepts that was presented by the UDC, not at a land use hearing but at a separate public event, was the canopy detail, which we've now changed and matched the facade color treatments throughout the building. This was our November 1st visual of Walnut Street. As we talked about earlier, this is the setback. This is the view corridor of the east building. And this is the revised. So what you can see here is a much more articulated roof line. As you can see, we've added dormer details in addition to the setback. And what we've actually done, and it's a little bit hard to see, but we've made this building symmetrical on this facade with the opposite facade of the tower. So these bay windows and this glass detail actually lines up exactly what you see on the Washington Street facade as well. The most significant change in this plan relates to the West Building. This is a view down Washington Street with Washington Terrace to our left. This was our last proposal at four stories. What we've done is we've added a fifth story with a setback of about 7 feet to take further, to give further articulation to the roof line, similar to what we did on the middle building, just not as far back. The other component that we were asked to consider, as I said, was the facade detail, particularly on this facade where it's most visual from Washington Street looking east. What I'll also point out in this picture, this was the November 1st presentation. As you can see here, this is the setback at 45 feet. What we've got in front of you today now calls for the 90-foot setback. And what we've done is you can see a brick facade from what was originally proposed. One of the other design elements that we've actually changed, this is a view from the rear parking lot looking east towards Walnut Street. We've added, and this is the Foster Street setback that I've referred to, what we've done in our building along Walnut Street is we've actually added two setbacks about 58 feet in length, both at this location and this location, to try to reduce the massing further from Foster Street. From our perspective, rather than a four-story building, we think this building feels more like a three-story building when you add that setback detail into the equation. This gives you a view of the 90-foot setback from Foster Street along Washington Terrace. So as I said before, this was originally 45 feet further out. And I should point out here, one of the ongoing questions, or one of the discussion points we've had, relates to the facade treatment at this location. It is something that we're looking at right now and are continuing to have discussions with the community on. As Steve mentioned,
the sides are not, and the back are not resolved yet. Is that a fair statement?
That's correct.
Okay.
This is the roof plan that Steve mentioned earlier. What we tried to do here is call out a couple of different components. I'll walk you through it. If you have questions, let me know. But clearly the green space is meant to be green roof. So as you can see here along Washington Terrace, we've got one green roof space on the fifth floor, and we've got an additional green roof on the fourth floor. These are areas that would not be accessible to the public. These are design elements and part of our sustainability efforts with the project. In addition to those roof deck spaces, we also have outdoor spaces that are tied to the residential units. What we have here, you can see in this yellow beige at the, I'll call it the north location on the west building and the north location on the east building, as well as the south location on the middle building and the north location on the middle building, outdoor spaces that would be accessible to residents of the building. What we've also laid out here in orange are three different locations where you could place TV panels. And so if you have questions, Lauren can answer those, but those have been designed so that it's TV ready if we decide to go forward. So just a quick refreshment on some of the overall improvements, as Steve said. I'll go through these quickly. One of the biggest components is a dramatic change to the intersection. As you can see here in red, the colors distinguish what the existing conditions are. If you look at the various widths that are shown in blue, our plan is to reduce those pedestrian crossings by anywhere from 6 to 30 feet to make it much more pedestrian friendly. In addition to that, we're providing significant signalization upgrades, which we think will have a dramatic impact on the traffic. And in the green, you can see across Walnut Street, north and south, we're also proposing to add bike lanes, and in addition, a turn lane right here on Walnut Street. Continuing, as we talked about, dramatic sidewalk improvements. This is the Walnut Street sidewalk looking north. We plan to increase that by approximately 7 feet to an average width of 15 to 20 feet. And by adding that bump out to reduce the crosswalk area, we're adding an apron of about 26 feet to further distance the pedestrian experience from cars. Continuing down, this is Washington Street looking west. By adding a canopy detail, we're actually able to increase the width of the sidewalk for a total of 22 feet at its widest point. It should range from about 16 feet to 22 feet in width, depending on where you're located. Obviously, key to all of these improvements is activating the sidewalks with further commercial space. And I'll also point out, in doing this, our ability to do this was predicated on the fact that we actually pushed our building back and used our land to create about 6,000 square feet of public realm. One of the other discussions we're having, and it ties to our conversation with the post office, but we did present a pocket park on your left-hand side here. This is the corner of Washington Terrace with the post office. As you can see, the vehicles immediately adjacent to us. We are, as Steve said, in discussions with the post office. One of the discussion points is providing a lane, which you can see here, why this is angled, to provide additional access in and out of the property to accommodate vehicular traffic. We have not agreed on this change, but it is something that we're discussing right now. It's one of the open business points with the post office. We were hoping today we could get some additional feedback on whether or not this is something that should be accommodated, but to date we haven't made a decision.
Can I just interrupt for a point of clarification?
Sure.
I understand the pocket park's not part of the special permit that's before us, but these improvements that you're talking about to Washington Terrace there, are they part of your special permit application? So you need to get this resolved before we can move forward, right?
Yes, absolutely.
Okay, just want to be clear.
So one of the things we also heard from the Newtonville Area Council, and I think from some city councilors, was the community space. Now, the community space is a discussion that dates back to April when we were talking to the public at Newton North, and we were asked to consider this as part of the project. We agreed to do so, but one of the key factors for us was really trying to figure out a way to activate that space so that the community and the general public really saw the true benefit. We studied a number of community spaces, and our concern was oftentimes they sit dormant and they don't actually get programmed the way that they should. So we set out to try to think of ways creatively to bring ongoing program activities and, most importantly, a wide range of people to this project in this space. And so what we did is we reached out to the artist community, we talked to Newton Cultural Alliance, and ultimately further discussions with the new Art Center, the NAC. One of the things we're excited to announce is that the 2,000 square feet that is part of this project would be curated by the new Art Center. And what I mean by that is the new Art Center would have access to that space. They'd be responsible for programming it. We talked about different classes for individuals ranging between 3 and 90 years old. In the Newton area, the new Art Center is committed to doing somewhere between 20 to 40 classes per week to not only members of their community, but also outreach programs like Second Step, Rosie's Place, and some of the elderly, as well as the Newtonville community.
Is this something, Attorney Buchbinder, that you're looking to put in a board order, or is this your just general sense of what you'd like to do here?
No, this could absolutely be put in a board order.
All right, just want to be clear, because I want to be clear what we're going to be voting at some point, folks, and we're going to be voting on a board order, and I want to be very clear this is where the differentiation is between what you'd like to do, which is going to be your prerogative if we approve a special permit, and what we're going to require as part of an order. And so I want to be very clear when we're getting a presentation of your desires versus what you're willing to commit to in writing and be bound by it. Go ahead, please.
Great. Thank you. Okay, so not only will the new Art Center obviously have access to this space for part of their program, but critical is also making sure the community has access as well. So we've tasked the new Art Center. Part of their responsibility will be to handle the coordination of the community, whether it's academic presentations, public presentations, discussion groups, community meetings. The NAC will actually provide the infrastructure to handle the ongoing events that also will occur at the space. And you'll hear from Dan Elias and some community members on the NAC tonight in further detail. So just to sort of tick through the overall project benefits, for those who are unfamiliar, again, we have 25% affordable, 15% is inclusionary, with 10% being middle income. At our last hearing, we committed to go LEED Gold certified. We've got 15,000 square feet of outdoor public space, 9,000 of which is part of the public plaza that you've seen before, and 6,000 additional sidewalk space that we've created with our property. As I discussed, we've got an artist community space. We've got a dramatic crosswalk reduction as well as significant signalization upgrades. And the last piece of this, which I'm going to go into a little bit more detail, is on transportation. And what we've committed to is a decoupling of parking and rent. We've got a ride-sharing program, which is inclusive of Zipcar. We have 2 spaces committed. We're trying for more. We have dedicated bike lanes along Washington Street and Walnut Street. We've also taken our cues from Cambridge as it relates to a bike program here by providing both dedicated bike parking at the street level for commercial users as well as private bike parking inside the parking garage at a more than 1.0 ratio to residential units. So news tonight, one of the discussions ongoing has been the I&I and the off-site improvements. So in addition to what I just mentioned to you, we're committed to an $800,000 I&I payment, which is at the 8-to-1 flow ratio, and we've set aside an additional $1 million for off-site improvements. Now, this is an ongoing discussion that we've had with the planning department as to the types of things that might be considered. Here are a list of 5 or 6 things that have been discussed to date, but under all scenarios, no matter what this list entails, we're committed to the $1 million. Some of the things that have been discussed are the bike lanes across the Walnut Street Bridge and past our site along Foster Street. We've discussed adding 2 bike stations or 2 bike pods. We've had a discussion on a funding mechanism for a pilot transit subsidy, which I'm going to go into in a minute. Further streetscape improvements on the east side of Walnut, so pavers, lighting, trees, etc., as well as the burying of the utility lines on the south side of Washington Street. So one of the things we're excited to talk through with you tonight is a transit subsidy pilot program. One of the things that has been an ongoing theme here is transportation. Obviously, we're located next to the commuter rail. We've got a bus station across the street from us. But what we really thought would be unique here was try to put this in action. So we've taken a shot at crafting what we're calling a transportation pilot program. What we've done is we've set aside $300,000 to try to kick this off. And we expect that this pilot program will last under this pilot program somewhere in the range of 3 to 5 years. And our hope is that this will be sort of the launching step for folks and future projects down the road as people think about transportation and parking requirements as part of mixed-use projects. So what we're going to present to you tonight is, like I said, a $300,000 transportation stipend that would reimburse folks for various alternative transportation options. So these are just some of the things that we've thought of. There's certainly more that could be added to this list, but the obvious would be the commuter rail passes, subway and T-passes, bus passes, bike-sharing passes, ride-sharing, such as a Zipcar, Bridge, or Lyft product. And so what we tried to do to think outside the box is we differentiated the stipend between the affordable renter and the market rate renter. Our thought process to date has been for each household, what we'll be willing to provide is up to a $200 rent credit for transportation. And the $200, the thought process is we actually use the commuter rail pass being the most expensive form of alternative transportation that was offered. And so our thought process is that a household, whether they opt for the commuter rail pass or a combination of some of the less expensive transportation options, we would be willing to reimburse in the form of a rent credit up to $200 per month per household. So the thought process is that this is a program that's really intended, the less car usage you have, the more the benefit. So as you can see here, what we've done is we've outlined a scenario where there's zero car usage or a household opts to have zero cars, and under either scenario, whether you fall within the affordable rental category or the market rate rental, we would reimburse or give you a rent credit up to 100% of the $200 cost for your alternative commuter transportation. If a household opts to rent one car, what we're proposing is we'd reimburse up to 50% of that cost for an affordable rental unit and up to 25% for a market rate unit. Two or more cars, our feeling is that you should be penalized, so we don't actually offer the stipend. If you rent more than two, if you have two or more cars at our site, you actually wouldn't benefit from the transportation stipend. So that's all we have for tonight. Happy to answer any questions.
Great, thank you very much. Before we take questions from councilors, I know I have a lot of members of the public who wish to be heard this evening. Can I just get a quick show of hands of who'd like to speak? All right, that's a lot of folks. We're going to do that. I just need to do a piece of administrative business first, though, but I think it's going to be of importance to the public whose members are here and to those watching at home, and that is when we're going to next consider this petition. We are tentatively scheduled to be here on the 15th of December, which is a Thursday night. I think Councilor Lennon and Councilor Auchincloss had conflicts that evening. Am I correct? On the 15th. So two on the 15th. Is there any other member of the committee who cannot make it on the 15th? Alright. And I know Councilor Norton and Councilor Norton, you're available on the 15th. I think Councilor Albright was. Should we go ahead on the 15th then, colleagues? The dilemma we face is this. On one hand, I want all or as many as possible of our members here. It is not a regularly scheduled night for us to convene. We are already meeting Tuesday night that week, so I know it's yet another night out for us. On the other hand, if we don't take this up in December, we're now pushed into January. We're really then probably not voting on this matter till close to the beginning or middle of March. So can I just get a quick commentary from my colleagues. President Lennon, you want to weigh in?
I just wanted to say I have no problem with you going forward if I'm not there.
Okay.
Sure, I can catch up.
I'll be late.
All right, that's fine. And Councilor Crosley, are you going to be, I know you have a personal matter, are you going to be available at all that evening?
I should be. I may have to be late.
All right. Why don't we proceed, and of course we understand that personal matters need to take precedence. Let me suggest this. Why don't we proceed on the 15th and as scheduled? That may not be great in my house, but we'll make do. And I'm going to urge my colleagues, there's only a few of us who are going to be here that night on time. Please do your best to arrive promptly at 7 so we can get started immediately. With that, can I just get a, I'm going to start off on this side of the room, in the front rows. We're going to move back. I think everybody in the first row is affiliated with the developer. Anyone in the second or third row? The third row, if you could just raise your hands, come on up, please, the gentleman here, and then the one next to him, either one. Again, come to the podium, state your name, your address. If you have any affiliation with the developer or in any way, please disclose that as well. I think the public needs to hear it. And frankly, if you're here with the developer, this is really not the time for commentary. That's part of their presentation. So good evening, sir.
Thank you. Thank you, members of the committee and other counselors that are here and ladies and gentlemen of the public. My name is Dan Elias. I am the executive director of the New Art Center. I am a resident of Lincoln, Mass., not of Newton, but I have been running the New Art Center for 3 years. We have been in conversation with the developers of the proposed project about this 2,000 square foot space that they propose to make available to the community through us. The New Art Center is a 40-year-old, almost 40-year-old institution in the city of Newton. We occupy a space across the turnpike, for those of you who don't know us, in a church that was gifted to us by the city, in an old building which is on 9 levels, only one of which is accessible by ramp. We would program this space as a satellite space to that. We would program it for art classes. We generally run 5 classes during a day. We would program probably 2 spaces in this project in the 2,000 square foot footprint that would be available to us. My projections are if we could program this at 60% occupancy, the project would be sustainable in perpetuity. By 60% occupancy, I mean 60% of the available time slots filled with classes that run at an average of 8 people per class. Our audience does literally range from 3 years old to the end of life, whatever that might be. And we reach out to groups across the city, such as the Second Step, such as Rosie's Place is a partner of ours from Boston, also a couple of group homes of young adults living independently with disabilities. Currently, we run classes for them in Newton Highlands. We could use this space because it is physically accessible to program a much broader swath of the community than we currently do. I anticipate that perhaps 300 people could use this space in a given week, between 200 and 300 people. Adult classes during the day, children's classes in the after-school period, an evening class, perhaps classes on Saturday. We would also run events here that could be lectures, films, presentations of art. We would also be working with the developer to program wall space in the public passageways to do commissioned artwork along the interior walls of that passageway. Possibly, we've talked about a variety of possibilities, depending on who the anchor tenants are, for programming art in the public spaces, art relating to the tenants in those ground floor spaces, commercial spaces. I believe that art is a birthright of human beings. All of us in the room were artists, at least until we were 7 years old. many of us have chosen another path, but many members of the community find joy and pleasure in engaging with and experiencing art firsthand. And that's what we specialize in We've been doing it for 40 years. We have about 600 people a week in our current location. I see this as adding a 30-40% to that, and also being a swing space while we undertake a distantly planned renovation of our church building. This would be a place that could allow us to continue operations sometime after the 2020 time frame. I'm happy to take questions, but for the new Arts Center, having this space would be a complete game changer. We would become a regional powerhouse. It would be accessible. We would be able to program for those who cannot physically access our spaces in the church, and it would become a more public space. Our current space is on a side street, on a park. It's beautiful, but it's a destination. It's not someplace that people find easy to happen in, and this would be a much different level of visibility for us, and a much different level of visibility for the arts in North Newton.
Thank you very much, sir.
Thank you.
Next, please. Come on up, sir.
Thank you, members of the City Council. My name is Martin Healy from the law firm of Goodwin Proctor, 100 Northern Avenue in Boston. I'm here tonight representing the United States Postal Service and the owner of the Newtonville Post Office, which is on Washington Terrace, adjacent to the parcel. As has been indicated, we've voiced our concerns about the ability to use Washington Terrace. At this point, it's basically for 5 house lots and the Postal Service. The Postal Service has 6 loading docks that basically is how they move mail in and out to the Newtonville area. So we're very concerned. We wanted to go on record so that you were aware of this issue. We are continuing to work toward what we hope will be a resolution. We'd love to see that happen before this is voted on.
Do you expect to have something by the 15th of December, Attorney Healy?
We'll certainly try to make that happen.
Obviously, if there's something to report, even the agreement in principle, it'd be helpful. And if not, we'd like to know that as well. You're welcome to communicate with us by letter to our committee clerk rather than having to come out if it's just a progress report.
Thanks very much.
Thank you very much. Yes, Councilor Fuller, did you have a question for Attorney Healy?
Yes. Could you just expand on what the concerns are with at least what the current program is, just so we understand?
Well, Washington Terrace now is really underutilized in the sense that it's basically 5 house lots and the Postal Service. So it's dilapidated and sort of backward as it is, as a little private way. What this will do is transform it into, you know, a through street for the entire new development. So the Postal Service is just concerned that with the new use of that street, their ability to use it as they're currently using it for in and out loading of mail would be impeded. And they're very focused. The Postal Service is very focused on that, and that's one of their key objectives. They asked us to make it known to the City Council.
Thank you again. Yes, Councilor Yates, did you have a question for Mr. Healy?
Yes, just very briefly. You said, is the postal of output of the entire city go through there and go from there to larger areas, or is it just a Newtonville post office?
To be honest, I'm embarrassed. I don't really know the answer to that question. My assumption is that it's serving the Newtonville, you know, PO zip code.
Councilor Baker, either can you shed light on Councilor Yates' question regarding the Postal Service or another question?
My understanding is that some of the activity that used to go on there was moved over to Waltham, but it still is a distribution center for this part of the city. I do think that the issue of how the public as well is served through the back is an important one, not just the trucks, because that's the, anyone who's used that post office knows that the sometimes the parking on the front is not as plentiful as it might be, and access is a real issue. So I hope you'll be successful in preserving those opportunities.
I just asked, Mr. Chairman, because in the past it's been my understanding that that was a central post office for the whole city, so the stuff was coming in from other post offices. If that's no longer the case, then we should
be informed of that.
Perhaps, Mr. Healy, you can just respond to us. Quick email will be sufficient, I think, in terms of Postal Service. I think the larger question for us, and really not one that we have questions for you, is to make sure that whatever is going in here is workable for a direct abutter of the United States government that delivers the mail. But I think that there's discussions between your client and Mr. Bookbinder's client that will hopefully resolve that issue. The issue, Councilor Baker, regarding the neighbors is different, and that's really something more for us to be discussing as a council. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Next, on this side of the room, just a show of hands on that row. Going to the second row, and then we'll move backwards. Come on up, please, ma'am. You just need to cut through. Maybe your neighbors will let you go through. If I can just get someone else to line up after her, try to keep this flowing. I apologize. We're not ideally set up in here. Something that we as a council are well aware of and hopefully trying to improve upon. Good evening, ma'am.
Hi, my name is Pam Sufro, and I live at 20 Blythdale Street in New Hill. I'm really looked with interest at these suggestions. I think they'd all be great under the current zoning. I noticed that there have been some tweaks to the program, to the whole project, but it still is the same density, same height, still has that same flat roof. In fact, it has a flat roof with little boxes on top. So those are some things that really haven't been changed over the course of this whole number of months that we've been working on this. But what I'm really here to speak about is affordability. As you know, several speakers who favor this proposal do so because they think it will be affordable. So now we know the price of the rent. Studios are about $1,800 a month. One bedroom is about $2,500 a month. Two bedrooms, $3,400 to $3,700 a month. The project demolishes 22 existing affordable units, and originally it simply replaced those with only netting a floor for very low-income people. Later, the developer did make what sounded like an important addition, which I liked. He suggested 17 additional units of workforce housing, netting us 21 affordables. And at first, this sounded appealing, but Newton workers, and because Newton workers should be able to live in Newton. But as it turns out, we discovered by looking at data that we already have reasonably priced rental units affordable for Newton workers. We have a lot of 2- and 3-family buildings, and apparently that is where Newton workers are living who are doing some renting. According to RKG Associates, and I have a chart which I have for all of you here, this is data that the city...
You can provide that. Councilor Lennon, can you grab that and provide that to our committee clerk?
Oh.
I don't get to ask the president to do these tasks very often. Thank you. Go ahead, ma'am.
We have, according to them, we have a surplus of units at 50 to 120% AMI, which is at workforce level. So people are living in them now. They don't need a lottery ticket for it. The city paid for RCG to analyze Newton's housing needs. It's right there in black and white. So we really need to look at that because that's important. We really should be data-driven here. And what we need is affordable housing for people below the 50% AMI. That's what we really need, and I think it's right there. Now, the RKG data does show that there is a severe shortage of ownership housing for Newton workers. If this were a condo project for ownership housing, then that would be positive for that workforce issue that we're talking about. But it isn't a condo, it's a rental, and it needs to meet Newton's rental needs. So, now, does it meet those affordable housing needs that have been outlined? The rents are going to be $3,400 or more for a two-bedroom apartment. Oh, that's great, so you can get a $200 credit for, you know, that's lovely. The project meets the developer's demands. It may meet the needs of wealthy people who do want to live in an elevator building, but it does not meet the needs for affordable housing in Newton. If you do care about affordable housing, I think what would work is to use the current zoning, have 1/3 for affordable units, 34 affordable units for low AMI residents. We would love that. It's important for Newton. You will still get an elevator building for constituents who can afford it. It will look better. It will feel better. It is less intrusive on the neighborhood. It will go a long way toward treating all residents fairly. So please vote no on this proposal. Keep it under the current zoning, and you will love it. Thank you so much, ma'am.
Next, please, come on up. I'm going to remind people, please try to keep your comments to 3 minutes or less. We have a lot of folks who want to be heard this evening. Good evening, ma'am.
Hi, my name is Sarah Ecker. My family and I have lived for nearly 20 years at 68 Prospect Park in Newtonville, less than a mile from the proposed Ore Block Lexington Place project. I live, shop, dine, walk, drive, and park in Newtonville, and I welcome this proposed development in my neighborhood. I believe it is just the kind of project Newton should encourage, and I urge you to support it. Just today, the Boston Globe reported on the annual Greater Boston Housing Report Card prepared by Northeastern Secaucus Center. This study concludes once again that our region's housing supply is not keeping up with our housing demand for our growing population, leaving us with less affordable housing than ever. I want my city, Newton, to play a role in addressing the housing needs of our region, and I believe that permitting the development of multi-unit housing in our village centers, near our public transportation lines into Boston, is a good, responsible move. I support this project because it will provide new housing options for younger and older residents, will create some additional affordable housing units, and by introducing a new mix of retail space will contribute to a livening up of the area, particularly on weekends and in the evenings. The Washington Walnut Street site is a somewhat neglected area and a good location for a mixed-use project. I appreciate that the developers have responded to concerns raised by the planning department, the council, and residents, and believe that the proposed project will be an asset to our community. This project will advance affordable housing efforts in Newton, something I and many of my fellow residents care deeply about. Thank you to the committee for your diligent attention to this project and for affording the public an ample opportunity to share our views.
Thank you. Next, please. Good evening.
Good evening, Mr. Chairman. Paul Hostman from Temple Street in Ward 3. The site and the project, from my perspective, are ideally suited to achieve the objectives that have been established by the city, beginning with the comprehensive plan. These thoughtful, forward-thinking objectives of smart, transit-oriented development, affordable housing, and village centers translate to real opportunity for so many of our fellow citizens, residents, and city employees. For example, a young family whose children would be able to walk from this site to school, elementary school at Cabot, Bay Middle, North High School, who could commute to Boston without the cost and environmental impact of cars and gasoline, and who could enjoy all the amenities of the village. A senior citizen who'd be able to walk to the senior center, stop for coffee on Walnut Street, have the convenience of both a market and a pharmacy within walking distance. Instead of a city employee, maybe somebody who works at City Hall or at the high school, could live a car-free lifestyle with pedestrian access to work, shopping, health club down the street, access to Boston by public transit. Instead, as a community, we should be proud to expand opportunity and share all that Newton has to offer with residents like these. Plus, as you heard previously, local merchants will reap the benefits of a built-in customer base here just a stone's throw from their doors. This cycle of expanding economic opportunity is precisely what the city could be seeking to achieve. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you. I've had a request for our new TV person that if you speak and you have a business card or some other form of identifier, you could provide it to her. She's trying to get keep track of the speakers, taking pictures and so forth. So you'll be over there. And she's also indicated if you're looking to get more screen time and exposure in one of the interviews, you can get that opportunity as well. I'm going to suggest that we do that after the public presentation so we get to keep going here. Good evening. And again, do provide her with your information if you have a card or something of that nature. Good evening.
Good evening. How's it going?
I think so far so good.
Love it. All right. I live in Upper Falls, and I moved here a year and a half ago. I am an
engineer.
Oh, I'm Kira. Sorry.
Last name, please.
Catlin.
Thank you.
Anyone to mention? All right. I live in Upper Falls, and I'll be looking for housing after I graduate with my master's in education in the spring. And I'll be interning in the Newton Public School this winter and spring, and I'm very excited. However, the Newton housing situation is not very accommodating to people who have a lower income, and the prospect of this development offers a lot of accommodations accommodations and a lot of infrastructure that's very supportive of younger generations living with older generations and integrated living, which is something I'm really excited about. And then there's an up-and-coming trend for housing. I think it's awesome that it's located close to public transportation, and the parking situation is very accommodating towards using alternative modes of transportation rather than individual modes of transportation. I'm very supportive of this project, and I hope it's approved. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Come on up, please. Good evening.
Good evening. Good evening, Mr. Chairman and fellow councilors. My name is Stephen Cohen, and I'm a resident of Crom Ave in Newton. I've been lived in the Newton area for almost 40 years. I support this project wholeheartedly. I have no affiliation with this development, nor do I even know most of these people here with the development. My comments will be short, and I'm not here to any specific improvements, but overall, I think the professionals among your community and your group can certainly come up with all the great details. I've worked in real estate development for almost 40 years, with major rehab from Boston to Newton to Worcester and New Bedford, so I've been around the area for a while. This is a great opportunity for the community to add some new housing next to public transportation within the next village area, which is really all up and coming. It will help sustain the vitality of numerous Newtonville businesses. The need for apartments in this area is just so important. Several members of my own family have looked for apartments recently, and there's such a need for more reasonable units at a reasonable rent. I think this development is exciting and certainly will revitalize the area. It's such a significant property that desperately needs to be redeveloped, and this will be another gateway to this great city. This plan is beautiful, and I'm looking forward to watching it. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Next, please come on up. Good evening.
Good evening. I'm Nancy Bowers. I've lived for 23 years with my family at 154 Oliver Road. I am testifying tonight in support of this proposal. In the hallway on the way up here, someone in a stage whisper said, and I heard, oh, I think she's going to testify about her agenda. He's here all the time too, so he probably has one too, but I do have an agenda. I love Newton, and I would love to see diverse housing in Newton for young people and for old people like me who need a place to go and be downsized. The proposal is attractive to young people. It's attractive to me, my two adult daughters, and I will probably compete for the one bedrooms, although they may go over to Austin Street, but we're all in my family in need of this development. Today, because I didn't have to work, I went to the Boston Foundation's presentation of their housing report. I don't know what you do when you have a day off.
And as the city councilors, we tend to do similar policy walk type of things.
Yeah,
go ahead.
Yeah. Well, you need a life like I need a life. But I was really informed by the presentation at the Boston Foundation. I mean, they did a survey of young people, and what young people want are exactly the features of this proposal: transit-oriented, village-centered, smart growth, LEED certified, bike lanes, parking has to be extra. And of course, this transportation pilot program that's been presented tonight is a continued plus. I'm also in favor of this proposal because it provides affordable housing. It is an embarrassment to me that Newton has only developed 6 or 9, depending on what statistic you want to use, new affordable housing units in 7 years. And those were provided by CanDo for the most part. This is not an attractive building currently. This is a very unsafe crossing street. The developers have resolved many of the problems in this area that we wouldn't be able to resolve without developers. I am not associated with any of the developers. I know you asked us to self-disclose. But I happen to inform myself on all the changes that the developers have made based on things that you've asked for. things that Newtonville has asked for, like Newton has asked for, and they have created a proposal that's been highly responsive, so I think that's the kind of developer we want to have in Newton. Thanks very much.
Thank you. Next, please. And then if there's others on this side of the room, if you want to just maybe line up in the back, you don't all have to line up at once. There's a lot of folks. Good evening, ma'am.
Oh, hi. My name is Allison Conant. I live at 68 Brookside Ave. I've lived there for 35 years. It's just a few blocks from the proposed development. I oppose the size and scale of the current proposal and the developer's request to rezone the property. I think the developer should make more substantial changes to significantly reduce the size of the proposal to comply with the property's current zoning. By significantly reducing the proposal, it would be more compatible with the surrounding neighborhood, and it would have less of a negative impact on traffic. Some of my comments have to do with the transportation questions in the planning department's September 9th memorandum and the succeeding proposals put forth by the developer. The memorandum says that traffic impact and access study estimates 89 new trips during morning peak hour from this development. I'm not sure how peak hour is defined here, but I'm wondering if the consultants and the planning department members had experienced driving south from Washington Street down either Walnut or Lowell at about 7:30 in the morning prior to the start of Newton North High School. I drive that way. It's already congested, and it's really hard to see where additional cars would go. Well, we know where they'll go, but it will add to the congestion. Secondly, I do not see how modernizing the signalization just at Washington and Walnut is going to decrease the number of vehicles. The traffic signal at Lowell and Washington should also be modernized because much of the development traffic will also be going through that intersection. Third, I hear a lot about these bicycle lanes. I'm a bicycle advocate, but I don't understand how the installation of bike lanes in both directions from Foster Street to Newtonville Ave can work. If there are two vehicle lanes southbound on Walnut going towards Washington, how can that be reduced to one lane at Foster without causing vehicle congestion? Also, bicycle lanes are for bicycle travel. A bike lane that goes for two blocks is not advantageous to cyclists. It just takes away space that could be for vehicle parking, vehicle travel, or parking. I just want to say that I did hear the developer say that ADA compliant crosswalk was a sort of a benefit that the developer was going to put forward as part of this proposal. I don't think that ADA compliant crosswalks is a benefit. It seems to me that's the responsibility of the city anyway, and we don't need to thank the developer for that particular thing. Now, I wish I could have asked the attorney for the post office this question, because I haven't heard it mentioned, but in the afternoon and at night, all up and down, not all up and down, on the south side of Washington Street, from Lowell to about across from where Dance's Image used to be, are the mail trucks. Now, there used to be, on the Austin Street lot, I don't know, something was renegotiated, and they are now on Washington. Where are these trucks going to go? Because with this development, that takes up a lot of the parking that I would think residents and the commercial enterprises that are proposed are going to need. So that really needs to be looked into and negotiated with the post office, it seems. I just want to say that I keep hearing about transit-oriented development. I have lived in Newtonville, right around the corner from this, for many years. There is not currently a TAB location. People can, the commuter rail is great if you want to travel at commuter hours and if you can go down those steps.
I'm going to ask you to wrap up, if you would, please, ma'am.
Okay. But it's going to be a long time before this is actually transit-oriented development. I just have one more thing to say. In summary, I was surprised that the Transportation Peer Review did not take a wider look at the impacts on traffic and parking in the area. I feel and hope that it is the responsibility of the Newton Planning Department to take a step back and take a wider look at more streets and intersections to be impacted by this development and by Austin Street, because we count on the planning department to protect our interests as citizens who live and get around the city. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much. Next, please come on up.
Hi, good evening. Thank you. My name is Rosalie Weiner, and I live in Brookline because I tried to move out of Newton 7 years ago after raising my sons here and living here for 40 years because there was no affordable housing. Upon losing a job and having cancer and recovering, I couldn't afford Newton, and I still come home. This is home to me. I was here for the presidential campaigning at our dear state rep, Lou Falls' home, and with her to campaign the night of the election. I come back here because it's home, and there wasn't any affordable housing, and I'm proud to say I raised my sons here as a divorced single mother who didn't get support, but I made sure I was here. This is home. This is where my friends are. This is where, the city I love. Nothing shabby about Brookline, but my heart isn't there. My heart is here, and I hope there will be more affordable housing, and this project is just beautiful. Thank you.
Thank you, ma'am. Come on up, please, Mr. Steele. Good evening.
Good evening. Thank you very much for the committee for setting up this event for tonight. I'm Chris Steele, 254 Elliott Street, Upper Falls. And I'm getting a little used to standing up here at this rostrum and talking to you about a bunch of different things, either as a private resident or formerly as the chair of the Economic Development Commission. Now, I'm here as a private resident tonight, but I'm very gratified to see that we're talking about the mixed use for zoning overlay, which is something that we advised on when we were with the Economic Development Commission. It was designed as something that could be used in the village centers to help to make sure that we actually brought something back that worked decades and decades ago. Mixed-use development that brought residents together with businesses, both because it made sense in terms of using the transportation infrastructure that we have in the city, as well as doing something that we have complained about a lot over the years, which is to make sure that our local businesses survive and thrive. The things that make local business, small business, actually survive are being in a place that actually makes sense from a business plan perspective, and also is within the heart of a nexus of customers that can support that business. By taking a look at the mixed-use floor overlay that we've been talking about here, not only does it provide that modern space that helps to renovate and bring up to date a space that has desperately needed it, but it also makes sure that there is a comfortable place where customers can come in. It makes sure that there is a critical mass of those people to actually support some of these businesses that are not just banks and nail salons. So I applaud you and thank you very much for taking this issue up.
Thank you. Come on up, please. Hi, Fred Goldstein, 69 Commonwealth Park West. I'm a tenant in the Yore building, obviously not much longer. With regard to the transportation problems, I've been working in Newtonville for some years now, and I noticed the traffic has always been bad, but the plan and the parking is bad. It appears to me that the so-called mitigation efforts taken take it out of the frying pan and into the fire. Well, by not bundling the parking spaces with the apartment, there will be a positive incentive for tenants to park on the street. And perhaps if they can't find a space, use one of the commercial spaces. This will make the parking situation in the neighborhood worse. The correct approach is to have enough parking for everyone that the building does not externalize its parking and traffic requirements onto the rest of the neighborhood and the other buildings nearby. The idea that people will ride bicycles rather than cars is frankly preposterous. We don't have the climate. We're too old. This is not Davis, California. You know, and all these plans reflect Davis. Two bike lanes for 12 bikes an hour on a sunny spring day. This is ridiculous. We're now taking away the right turn lane from Washington Street so that the traffic will be backed up worse. Narrow Washington, a busy street to one lane, and it'll be backed up even farther. We need to keep the traffic flowing and have the parking adequate for everyone so that the businesses and residents and other people who work there have enough parking. Making parking difficult doesn't get rid of cars, doesn't have this wonderful ecological idea that the Cambridge bicycle people will tell you. No, people have to use cars. This is not a transit-oriented development. Trains go a few trains a day to downtown Boston. Jobs today, they're in places like East Cambridge, the Longwood District, Route 128. It's
scattered all over. They're not all downtown, and we only have rush hour traffic downtown, public transit downtown. The buses don't even run after 8 p.m. So people have to have cars. They can't go anywhere after 8 p.m. So I think they need to have enough parking. And by the way, anyone who thinks there's about 2,000, 3,000 people, it looks like, who all think they're going to get affordable housing out of this project. I have a suggestion. Go down to the Desi's, buy a $10 scratch ticket. If you win $1,000, that's more likely than you'll win the lottery to the corridor at this complex. 24 affordable units, when there's thousands of people wanting them, is the chance of winning is infinitesimal. The city, living in a city, should not be the prize for winning at a casino. We need a housing strategy that has naturally affordable housing, not lottery tickets. I'm going to remind everyone here that we do not engage in applause, all right? This is a civic meeting. We are hearing public comment. We are going to be listen respectfully to each and every comment from each and every member of the public. Good evening.
Good evening. My name is Lynn Weisberg. I live at 5 Alden Street. I've been a Newton resident for 25 years. I'm here to speak in favor of the project. Before I get to the couple of points I wanted to make, I just have to respond to something that the previous speaker mentioned. This is not a proposed development that has a corridor. We all know that the units, whether affordable or not, are going to be indistinguishable from one another. Everyone renting there will enter and leave from the same door. So I think that comment was totally uncalled for. Many speakers tonight have addressed the features of the project that they support. I'm going to focus on the housing aspect because that's the issue that I'm most concerned about. That in no way means that there aren't other equally beneficial aspects to this project. In addition to the 15% of the units that will be affordable, the developer, to his credit, has agreed to allocate an additional 10%, leaving a quarter of the units in this project with some measure of affordability. That measure of affordability will last for the life of those apartments. The developer has also, and again, in many respects, they've revised the plan. In one of the respects that I think is particularly noteworthy, they now have 6 3-bedroom units. Not only is the need for affordable housing well documented through many, many studies, but the need to have larger units that are appropriate for families, such as 3-bedroom units, is also well documented. I won't speak to the zoning issue because other speakers have addressed that very comprehensively, but I will only say that this is a location and the details of the project are exactly what the MU4 zone was designed to allow to be built. So, Mr. Chairman, you've allowed lots of public comment. We appreciate that. Looks like many more people want to speak tonight. I hope that when the committee finally gets around to voting, you will vote in favor of a special permit and in favor of the zoning change. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Good evening.
Good evening. My name is Fran Jardine. I've lived in Newton for 39 years with my family, and I'm at 19 Crofton Road. I think it was in 2012 that I heard about the creation of the mixed-use 4 zoning, and it seemed at that time like a forward-thinking ordinance creating a tool to implement the city's thoughtful comprehensive plan. Washington Place seems like a perfect model of the use of MU4. We've heard the details of the goals of the MU4, again reiterated tonight, and the highly creative proposals that were presented make this an even more exciting possibility. I have neighbors who could not find housing in Newton after their family was grown. They actually moved to Wellesley. They sold their house to a lovely family with 3 lovely school-age children. But these neighbors had grown up in Newton themselves, had raised their families here and very much wanted to stay, and they would have loved an option like Washington Place. I urge you to grant this MU4 permit and to allow this creative, exciting possibility for Newton that I think we'll all be very proud of.
Thank you. Come on up, please. Good evening.
Good evening, and happy holidays to everyone. So my name is Melissa Abelard. I used to live in Newton, and actually my son brought me here. That's where he was brought up. And we currently live in Stowin, and I work at Equinox in Chestnut Hill. And the reason why I definitely would love to have this happen is that where we're at, everything costs a lot. And my son, his academics, is beyond sensational. And his passion, he said, I would love to just go back home to Newton. But the cost is so expensive. And I would love for this project to happen so that whether it's myself or anyone who has family and in Newton North or even in elementary school is able to enjoy an affordable housing so that the children are able to develop and learn where I feel like I know Newton is a great place for education, and there's other places as well, but I definitely agree on this. Thank you.
Thank you. Next, please come on up, sir.
Good evening. My name is John Peltier. My wife and I live car-free at 92 Central Ave in Newtonville. I support the revised option of the Old Lock development and rezoning to MU4. We need more housing in Newton to meet demand, and these units will help fill that need. The changes presented tonight have improved both the style and scale of the project, and I was very happy to see these improvements. A first floor height of 16 feet, along with good sidewalk width, massing, and extended sidewalks at the corner, will create a more pedestrian-friendly environment for this part of Newtonville. My background is sustainable transportation, and I'm a project manager in transportation at Harvard University. I'd like to speak to both the TDM elements as well as general access. Newtonville is a transit-accessible village. I would consider this project transit-oriented development. The sheer number of areas you can get to on a single-seat ride is pretty comprehensive right now. Waltham, Watertown, Alston, Brighton, Downtown, Needham on the bus, not to mention Metro West communities, Fenway, Copley on the train. And Newton, you can get to know Nantham, Newton Corner, West Newton, Highlands, Upper Falls, Auburndale, and with a bit of walking or a transfer, every other village in Newton. Yes, even Thompsonville. Does service need to be more frequent? Of course. Do they need to run later at night? Yes. But these lines already get many people around our community every day. The MBTA has its own problems, but they won't magically give us more service on these routes. We need more people to be living in our transit accessible village centers and demanding transit by using the current service and lobbying our elected officials to improve what we have. That helps residents of all ages have transit that better serves them, even if they're not in village centers. Regarding CDM elements of this project, at Harvard, we provide a 50% discount for all employees for a T-Pass. Our transit share this year was 34%, and our driver loan was 13%. TDM measures have been proven to reduce car ownership and single occupancy vehicle trips. These include decoupling parking rates from rent, providing pass subsidy of some kind, information packets for new and current residents, comprehensive and secure bike parking, and allowing zip cars or other car sharing service on site. Finally, in terms of bike access, protected lanes need to be provided to the project site, be that curb protected where curb is being changed or parking protected in areas that are not getting curb changes. Protected bike lanes allow for residents biking to the village to park easily and visit shops and restaurants. They reduce sidewalk riding by providing a safe place protected from moving traffic, and they improve the pedestrian experience. Protected bike lanes should be provided on both sides of Walnut through the project descent and across the bridge to the southern part of Newtonville. While increasing bike access on Lowell is also a good idea, it would mainly serve commuting traffic passing through. Asked with drivers, studies show that 75% or more of bike trips are non-commuting, which means they're going to continue using Walnut as a prime destination corridor. Washington Street is, of course, the elephant in the room in regards to access. It is one of the prime east-west corridors and connects multiple destinations, schools, and villages. At the higher speed road, full protection for folks using the bike is all the more critical. The timing of how this project will fit in with paving and other improvements will be critical, and I trust our new Director of Transportation and the city will be looking hard at how we can provide short-term access while planning for longer-term infrastructure that would meet seamlessly with what is proposed in West Newton. In conclusion, I fully support this development and additional housing and transportation options it brings to Newton. Thank you.
Thank you, sir. Next, please come on up. Can I have a quick show of hands? How many other folks still want to speak? All right. We're going to go to about 9:15 of the public speakers. I've got to allow some time for my colleagues to actually engage in some dialogue among ourselves. and ask questions for the planning department to develop. I'm going to try to get as many people in as possible. Go ahead, please.
Good evening. Thank you for giving me the time this evening to be heard. My name is Robin Polishook. I live at 121 Forest Avenue in West Newton. A little over 3 years ago, on September 21st, 2013, my husband and I were meeting friends for dinner at the newly opened Cook Restaurant for a 7:30 reservation. It was a busy night. Cook, Rice Valley, the paint bar, they were all filled with people, so we needed to park a block away from Cook on the Mass Pike side of Washington Street. It was dusk, but it certainly was not dark out. We parked the car, looked both ways, and began to cross the street. I remember hearing a bang, and when I regained consciousness, I knew that my husband and I had both been hit by a car. We both suffered concussions. My husband had a broken shoulder. He lost his tooth. He needed stitches on his forehead. I had a very impressive hematoma on my upper left thigh and hip, and a very large hematoma on the back of my head, which resulted in 4 months of dizziness and vertigo. We spent 2 nights at the B.I. Deaconess Hospital after being admitted to the emergency room there. We were told that had we been hit 5 seconds earlier, or if the gentleman who hit us had been driving an SUV, neither of us would have survived this accident. I tell you my story because I believe we have a real pedestrian management problem in this area of Newton. And I hope that this will be addressed soon before someone else is either injured or, God forbid, killed. I believe that this project means to address this pedestrian management problem. Thank you.
Thank you, ma'am. Next, please. Good evening.
Good evening. My name is Stephanie DeSantis. I live at 58 Sheridan Road in Watertown, Mass. What I wanted to address this evening was the petition that the Neighborhood for a Better Newtonville had put out on Facebook about, I think it was around May. They had put out a petition, and it stated that this particular project was logged together with Austin Street and Court Street. It gave out lots of misinformation in regards to that the 171 very expensive apartments that would provide and gain no affordable units, it wouldn't contribute to Newton's affordable housing, and it was a large upscale project. Many people, including myself, signed this because we were concerned about what was being forced. I know that I see for many people that later learn more about this particular project that signed this petition that may come forth to you, that now many of these people do not want their names put on this petition because it was misleading. It was multiple aspects of things put together, and it wasn't done in a way that was informative or educational to the people. So when the petition comes forth, just keep in mind that there's a lot of incorrect information that was put forth on it, and a lot of these people do not want to. And if they want to put a new petition out, then so be it, and put that one forth with the correct information, with a wide scope of educational background that goes with it. Don't do something in the dark with a bunch of people that are misled. That's all.
Thank you very much. Next, please, come on up. Good evening.
Hi, how are you? My name is Drew Rizzuto. I live at 26 Greylock Road.
Just speak up into the microphone, please, sir. Thank you.
Sorry, is that better?
Much better, thank you.
Yeah, so my name is Drew Rizzuto. I live at 26 Greylock Road, and I believe in voting yes on this issue. I recently moved from Dallas less than a year ago, and one of the things that really drew my wife and I and our young son to the community was just the access to public transportation, as well as a lot of the shops at the bottom of the hill in Newton, in Newtonville. And I've actually been a beneficiary of living in mixed-use housing. I lived in it in Dallas as well as Minneapolis, and it has a great way of bringing people together in the community. I think it's a great way to breathe life into an area that really has been suffering on that side of Washington Street. So I am in favor of the petition. So thank you very much for your time.
Thank you, sir, and welcome to the city. Come on in, please. Good evening.
Good evening, Chairman Laredo and members of the board. My name is Brendan Carrigan. I am not a Newton resident, but my family owns and operates the Barnes Family Shoe Store at 25 Kempton Place in West Newton. Since we spend most of our time at the business and less time at home, I consider 25 Kempton Place my primary home and my home in Winthrop as my secondary residence. We're here tonight because we support the Washington Place project as the beginning of a much-needed change to the Washington Street corridor. This board and many, many, many concerned citizens talk constantly about the future of Newtonville and the impact of this project. I am the future that we're talking about. I'm the next generation of a family business that's operated here for almost 70 years. And as one of those people whose future will be directly connected to the decision of this board, I just wanted to give a glimpse into my perspective. This project has great potential to be a destination in Newtonville if it's done correctly. When we first heard of the project, we got really excited. We imagined how nice it would be to move into a new location. We could maintain our loyal customer base, stay close to the neighborhood that we owe so much to, have increased visibility, and lose the negative aspects of our not-so-new locations that many of you know about. The major appeal of this project was an open layout that promoted activity and views of our store, our potential store, from three sides, the Washington Street side, the Walnut Street side, and all angles of the parking lot. The original proposal of the 4 to 5 stories with the most of the building on Washington Street had such a great appeal to us. Customers would drive into the parking lot and would see us from all angles. We feel that any other proposal placing more of the building towards Foster Street kind of suffocates the open-air scale that we were hoping for in this project. We're just asking that when you guys vote on this project that you keep in mind that the businesses that are going into this are hoping to be there long-term and that setting us up for the best success, visibility, openness, and ability to thrive in a new location. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Next, please, come on up.
Chairman Laredo and members of the committee, I'm Patrick Dober, 82 Oxford Road. I've spent my entire career in the fields of community development and affordable housing. As a congressional staff member in Washington, an equity investor in projects like this. Currently, I'm director of the Brookline Housing Authority, and I served for several years on the board of the Newton Housing Authority. So I've been personally involved in dozens of projects like Washington Place. What I wanted to say tonight is I've observed that the answers to three basic questions determine whether a project like Washington Place will be endorsed by the community and then achieve widespread appreciation when completed. So the first point is, do the proposed uses and design of the project fit within community standards and complement surrounding uses? And here, it seems that Washington Place ideally fits what the city envisions with the M4 zoning concept. Mixed development use of a modest scale, enhancement of the unique Newton Village Center concept, transportation-oriented development, pedestrian-friendly. It seems pretty close to ideal. The second question, are members of the development team well qualified and experienced in completing similar projects? Here again, the answer seems clearly yes. The development team combines a developer who has successfully built many similar buildings with an excellent architecture firm, legal counsel, and associated professionals, all of whom are first class. And then, third of all, is there a rigorous process for citizen and government review of the initial plans leading to revised plans that respond well to the community concerns that are raised? And here I compliment the committee. The review process ongoing is thorough, it's open-minded. It has resulted in significant enhancements to the concerns that have been raised, from reducing the massing, revising the roof line, the increased sidewalk width, the bike lanes, and it goes on and on. The response from the developer has been A+. In my experience, there's always opposition with good reason. Folks are naturally hesitant to give up what's familiar and existing. But what I've observed is that the vigor of opposition to projects like this, it's with surprising frequency turns into quiet approval once a well-vetted, professionally developed project is in operation. And I strongly suspect that many of our friends and neighbors now with concerns will gladly live and work and shop and do business in and around Washington Place when it's complete. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Come on up. Good evening.
Good evening, Chairman Laredo. My name is Rob Gifford. I live at 41 Oxford Road, and I'm here today. There is the Land Use Committee and the City Council to approve the rezoning and special permit applications for Washington Place. This is a great project for Newtonville and for the City of Newton. It provides approximately 160 new high-quality rental housing units. 25% of these will be capped at various levels of income and will be affordable. The other 75% will be market rate. But in comparison with Newton's median home price of $900,000, all of these apartments will provide a much more feasible option for downsizing seniors and millennials looking to stay or move into Newton. This project is entirely consistent with Newton's comprehensive plan, which envisions transit-oriented mixed-use projects in our village centers, pedestrian-friendly, close to shops, trains, and buses. As we now know, the fight against global warming will need to be waged on a city-by-city basis. Projects such as Washington Place significantly enhance the sustainability. They utilize existing streets and infrastructure, and they reduce traffic and air congestion by 25% to 50% as compared with traditional suburban sprawl. In addition, this is a well-planned, state-of-the-art building in terms of systems, windows, roofing, that will be either silver or gold LEED certified. There will be many significant public benefits that come with Washington Place, including wider sidewalks, 17,000 square feet of outdoor public space, a 2,000 square foot community room, an artist community space that was discussed tonight, vibrant new retail and restaurant tenants, bigger pedestrian bump outs and shorter crosswalks at Walnut and Washington Street, bike lanes, streetscape improvements, lane additions, and signalization improvements that will improve traffic flow at this intersection significantly. Finally, in response to extensive public planning department and committee input, the developer has significantly enhanced their original proposal by adding many of the benefits described above, as well as stepping back upper floors, reducing massing, and adding additional facade detail. The result is a properly scaled and attractive project that will be a very positive addition to Newtonville and the city as a whole. Thank you for your time and attention. I hope that you will support Washington Place.
Thank you. Next, please come on up. Good evening.
Good evening. How are you?
I think we're doing pretty well. How are you this evening?
Well, you're almost done.
We're not almost done. We still got a ways to go. Go ahead, please.
My name's Christine Greeley. I live in Auburndale.
Just give us the street address, please, ma'am.
Oh, sure. You coming over? It's 31 Freeman. Sorry. I think it's weird. I'm not...
The protocol is that I need to have a name and address for every person for our committee clerk.
I get it. Okay. Creepy, but it's okay. I'm not used to giving personal testimony on the issue of affordable housing. I'm usually presenting the facts, economic impacts and benefits, because I'm a historic preservationist. I work with historic buildings, many of which are used to, or reused, to provide affordable housing units. So I'm witness to and responsible for positive economic change in cities and neighborhoods. But in addition to having professional insight to this issue, I also have a personal viewpoint. I'm from Newton. I went to North. Go Tigers. My dad's a retired fireman, and my mom's a retired teacher. Because of their excellent benefits from the city,
myself and my two brothers, one of whom is now a Newton teacher, were able to go to college. And we came home saddled with loans, just like the rest of my generation, who you will notice are mostly absent from this discussion. You've probably seen them, though. They're your police officers, your firefighters, and your teachers. They don't live here. They can't afford it. They live in Framingham, or they live in Watertown, or they live in Waltham, but they want to live in Newton. Many of them are from Newton. They want to live and raise their families in the city they grew up in. They want to send their kids to Newton Public Schools, too. They do not believe that this is a possibility for them. And I know this because I know them. I have active friendships with them. I watch football with them on Sundays. It's not very fun. They dedicate their lives to serving this city, and I'm here to advocate for them. That's part of my job as a preservationist, and it's your job, too. You need to advocate for the people who serve this community and cannot afford to live here now. We need to show them that we value their devotion and their service by allowing them to live with us in our community and not just serve us in it. It is not sustainable to have a city with two populations, residents and employees. We must strive for diversity and inclusion, or we will end up divided. I can't tell you how many times I have told somebody where I'm from, and their response has been, "Oh, you're from Newton." And do you know what I say to that? I say every single time, "Not that Newton." Because I'm not. I'm on the Waltham line. And it bothers me that people think I'm not, that that's not even part of our city. We don't have to have this reputation. We don't have to be known as Newton. We don't have to contribute to this divide, which recently has been exposed like never before. Thank you.
Thank you. Come on up next, please. Again, we're going to try to wrap up our public comment in about 10 to 15 minutes. I really want to have an opportunity for the committee to deliberate. Good evening, sir.
Good evening. My name is Ed Daly. I live at 67 Maplewood Avenue in Newton's smallest village, Thompsonville. Many years ago, I was a member of the planning board for 10 years, having been appointed by Mayor Mann. Subsequently, I chaired David Cohen's inclusionary zoning committee, which drafted your current inclusionary zoning ordinance. The focus of my concern the entire time I've lived in Newton has been affordable housing. And despite many efforts by many people of good faith, our city continues to have a severe shortage of affordable housing. Recent assessing department data underscores this. Over 80% of housing sales for the last year are for more than $600,000. That's 1,000% above the $62,000 that my family bought its house for in 1978. Over the last 8 years, there's been real resistance to affordable housing, and we remain 800 units short of reaching the 10% goal. The 800 unit number comes from the mayor himself in a January 16th article in Commonwealth Magazine. We cannot fill the gap with $600,000 houses, $900,000, or the 10% of houses that are now being sold for $2 million or more. The Orblock proposal, from my perspective, is a creative response to affordable housing and vibrant villages. The proposal will add 43 attractive, village-centered, transportation-centered, and permanently affordable units, 25% of 171 units, something we've never done outside of forced development under Chapter 40B. This proposal will be a magnet for young people, for families and professionals who otherwise are priced out of Newton, such as our daughter and our granddaughter. Those people take their skills, their energy, and their buying power to other communities because we exclude them. You need only walk through villages like Jackson Square and Jamaica Plain, where I now teach, to appreciate how mixed-use development with a focus on affordable housing and small businesses has revitalized a neighborhood that 30 years ago was the last place to live in Boston and now is a go-to place to live in Boston. I believe this proposal can be that kind of a magnet. Thank you very much.
Thank you, sir. Next, please, come on up. Good evening.
Hi, how are you doing, Mark? My name is William Aldous. I live at the corner of Washington Street and Commonwealth Avenue, 1733 Com Ave. When I heard one of the speakers just say that this development is going to be a keystone of further development of the Washington Street corridor, I took a step back because the traffic where I am is absolutely horrendous. It's rush hour. I mean, it's backed up to the top of Braeburn, backed up to Temple Reunion, backed up to the Mass Pike Extension coming into Boston. So I don't see this as a good fix. Now, the thing I like to say is that the NDPA only looks at development after the project has gone through. That was what I heard from the Normandy people who are doing the Riverside development. So unless they change their tune, that's what happens. The if you go into Boston on the Mass Pike on the right side looking southbound, they're building what's called Boston Landing. Is everybody aware of that? Look at it? Have you been outside and looked in the neighborhood? Well, it's a new station they're building, and it's in North Brighton. And I wouldn't be surprised in 5 years from now, all those triple-decker houses are gone, at least from a quarter of a mile or so. They're putting up a lot of buildings, and that's going to be a go-to place. Now, the same thing is happening to Somerville with some of the Green Line expansion. So the houses rate price range up 100%. Now, the previous man just mentioned that the when he bought his house in Newton, it was like 1971, and he bought it for $60,000, $70,000 it was. Adjusted for inflation, you got to go 10, so that's $700,000. So basically, in the affordable places, housing prices are really not that out of whack. It's just our perception of them and the ability of most people to pay for them. The other thing is the MIT crew did a study about 3 or 4 years, I think, of the analysis of Washington Street, only from West Newton Square to the Circle of Death. They're leaving out the whole picture. I've seen people parking on Fuller Street going up towards Braeburn Country Club in the morning, so I don't think they're going to play golf. And they also park on the carriage road on Com Ave. And as far as even taking a bus in, forget it. It's in rush hour. It's very difficult. I would rather see more trains and transit. We, 60 years ago, if you remember, we did have four tracks going in. We had trains. We even had trolley cars going down Washington Street to Watertown to Kenmore. You could actually do a trolley car from Kenmore all the way to Harvard via Watertown Street. Then we put in the Bass Pike Extension, which was a disaster. If you Google it, then you'll see a guy from Brandeis did a really good study on how Callahan, what was the MTA, had pushed it through, ruined 25% of Newton's commercial real estate, was all homes. So my concern is that this development here in Newtonville is going to throttle, be a choke net on any future MBTA plans, because apparently, I haven't heard of it, maybe I'm wrong, and it was set in concrete. What could probably be fixed if we took a longer view of this corridor along the highway. Thank you.
Thank you, sir. Next, please. Good evening.
Good evening, Mr. Chairman. I'm Owen Fitzpatrick. I live at 20 Foster Street in Newtonville. I will be mercifully brief, I hope. I first want to, however, raise an issue about the process. I have now attended many of these meetings, and I appreciate the difficult task that the chairman has in overseeing the meeting. However, at least an hour is usually devoted to the developer's presentation. And in the public part of the so-called public hearing, much of the time is devoted to people, at least from the standpoint of those of us who actually live next to this project, to people who live in Chestnut Hill, they live in Newton Center, they live in various parts of Newton. And I would ask that the chairman, perhaps at a subsequent meeting, reserve some portion of time and ask if there are abutters or people who live in the neighborhood where the project is going, but you might reserve perhaps 5 or 10 minutes and invite those attendees to come. We all work, we have busy lives, just as we do, and many of us have been here very late into the night at many meetings and not had a chance to speak. I, however, am not among those because I've pushed my way forward, so you've heard from me before.
let me make a couple of points tonight. I appreciate that the planning department in its memo has finally acknowledged the existence of the historic district that borders this project. However, it notes, and I do applaud, the moving of the project farther away from the Foster Street boundary. However, we live in a multidimensional world. That's one dimension. And the concern of the abutters has really been about also the height and the scale of the project, which is not addressed by moving it 90 feet away from the Foster Street side. The shadow studies that are provided in the recent filings do also not acknowledge the reality of the world we live in, which is that the sun goes down just as it rises. And when it does, there will be lights on in these apartments that will extend, in some places, under the new plan, at least 5 stories up. I would like to see a rendering from the Foster Street side of what that will look like in our local historic district and in our residential neighborhood when those lights are turned on in the evening. That has yet to be shown. Finally, simply to say that many red herrings are strewed around, it seems to me, in these meetings, and that the central issue really is a question of the zoning change and the special permit. And none of us, as I've repeatedly said, are opposed to affordable housing. We're all in favor of the great things that everyone would like to see in Newtonville. I think most of us do not oppose the project in and of itself. The question is the impact on the local historic district and on the residential neighborhood because of the scale, the height, and the massing of this project. Thank you.
Thank you, ma'am. Come on up, Mr. Harrington. Let me just observe that I have tried and will continue to try very hard to allow multiple voices to be heard. There have been now a number of occasions when people have approached me, groups of folks who wanted extended time to present. We've provided that to them as an experiment. I appreciate that folks may not feel they have enough time to present. At some point, we exhaust the capacity to entertain public comment. We do have to deliberate. Again, if there's any particular group who needs more time, they're welcome to email me. We'll try to accommodate them. We want to make sure that all the different voices on this project are heard. Go ahead, please, Attorney Harrington.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members of the Land Use Committee, members of the City Council. My name is Peter Harrington. I reside at 157 Laurel Avenue in Newtonville, and it's within 300 feet of this project. I have an assignment to speak this evening. I know you're pressed for time. Part of my speech was going to be about density. I sent you all a rather lengthy letter, Mr. Chairman, in response to your request at the last public hearing. I hope everyone's had an opportunity to read it. I'm sure you all understood it because it was very clear and concise. And I would say that if it was going to be a class, it would take up the whole hour to talk about what was in those 3 pages. But it is a difficult problem because we all have a different idea of what density is. When you think of a dense place to live, do you think of Hong Kong or New York City or some other metropolis? Or do you have a romantic view about density? Do you think of an Italian hill town or a Greek island community that stacks one unit above the other as it goes up the side of the hill? Or do you envision a neighborhood like South Boston or perhaps even the lake? Do you think of a community that you might see out the window as you fly into Louis Miron International Airport in San Juan, and you see all the houses stacked together with their tin roofs, right, one by one by one. You see buildings with no backyards and cement sidewalks, no grass, on-street parking, private open space on rooftops, and no safe place for children. Those are the kinds I think about when I think about density. Some of you should know what it's like to live in a multifamily dwelling unit. You may have lived in one. You know that you hear arguments from next door, loud TV, You hear the heavy footsteps from upstairs. There's diminished privacy. Will this proposed building be any different? I doubt it. It's going to be a wood frame building, same as a three-story house in South Boston. And I suggest to you that the same problems will be in this same building. Now, I have a bunch of slides. I'm not going to present them. I'm going to cut out and cut short some of this because there's something that no one's talked about that I would like to take a few minutes to go over with you. Some years ago, thoughtful people put together a plan to divide Newton into zoning districts. One must assume when they created the business use district that they had in mind that the land would be used for business. Over the years, since Joan and I moved to Newton, it was a popular issue then, and that was 1962. Newton has an insufficient commercial base. We don't have a good commercial tax base, and our residents suffer from that. When the people who created the business zones in this city, I'm sure that what happened, and this is just from my experience, that they worked out what kind of businesses they were going to allow in the different zones, and then some bright mind, then it was the Board of Aldermen, said, oh, you know, some of our communities have apartments above a store. And so someone said, oh, well, we'll solve that. We'll add that in to business use. In the business use, you can have apartments above a store. Never, never did they think that someone was going to come and take that commercial space and convert it into a residential complex with some shopping on the first floor. Now, I'm saying to you that this is wiping out a good portion of our commercial space. And we hear the developers say, well, we can't put in office space there because you need an extra foot or 2 feet in the ceiling, and it won't work out. Well, we didn't create the zoning to provide for the developers and the speculators. We created the zoning to set a pattern for the city and what we wanted in the city. And when we designed our villages, we got rid of the concept of a downtown. We can't have a downtown here in Newton. Where are you going to put it? There isn't a place unless you say, well, we'll make Newton Center a downtown, crossroads. Or maybe make Newtonville a downtown and wipe out the other villages. You've created a city that has a little economic enclave. It's called a village. And it is the basis for our commercial taxes, which, as I'm sure you all know, those people pay twice as much as the residents pay on their tax rate. So we are faced with a problem where we have a fellow who's got a development, and whether he overpaid for the land or whether he thought he had a shoo-in project or whatever it is, he's come along with something. It's not too bad. It's not too bad. But it doesn't belong where it's going to go. First of all, it's taken away our commercial tax base. That's number one. And number two, the building is out of scale with the neighborhood. And the people in Newtonville, mostly in Newtonville, are not happy with it. They'll go for some 3- and 4-story buildings. That's what the land is zoned for, and that's what they expect. But they don't want to see 5-story buildings. They don't like it. But the people who come up here to speak from Wabin and Newton Highlands and wherever the other places they mentioned they were from, they love it. They think it's wonderful. But the people who live in Newtonville are opposed to it. I think that this business of losing the business district is very important. In closing, I would say that I think that the Brexit vote, the Trump election, Merkel's loss of her majority, the recent change in the national government in France, all point to a message that people more and more feel they're losing control of their government. Here in Newton, we have a similar problem coming up. We have a charter commission that wants to eliminate half of you. Have you taken off, eliminate your seats? No one has a clear plan to restore the balance for taxes and to preserve our community of villages. There are plenty of plans to change Newton, but there are no plans to protect Newton. We could start a plan to protect Newton by not changing the zone, letting them build their commercial project as that land is now zoned and designated and intended for. And I thank you very much. That's the end of my presentation. Except, Mr. Chairman, I have a personal request.
Of course.
I live very close. I have some observations I'd like to share.
Yeah.
Going east on Washington Street and trying to take a left turn onto Lowell Avenue at almost any time of the day, but particularly at rush hour, is dangerous. And it is dangerous because only one or two cars can make that left turn. People coming west on Washington Street keep up a steady stream of traffic and race the yellow light and go through the red light. And it's something that should be addressed because you're going to add more parking. In the last 3 months, I've had an opportunity to drive out to Waltham in the morning, around 8:30. And I will tell you, the traffic, I don't know about going south on Walnut Street, but I know that going north from my house, Lowell Avenue, is the traffic all the way up Lowell Avenue. There's a little bit of relief as you go down by the FAJ, but you get over to Craft Street, and traffic is backed up to that the milk store on, up by Calvary Cemetery. But there is a horrendous amount of traffic, and there's no place for it to go. The other thing is that I have some objection to people's comments about how wonderful this is for senior citizens. I'm 80 years old. I think I qualify as a senior citizen. I will tell you this. I am not walking over the bridge to go to Get Coffee or to go to Star Market. I'm going to take my car. I can't. If I walked over, I'd have to get a cab back. I'm not going over to the senior center and walking home. I mean, I have to take a nap there. So I suggest that there are a lot of wonderful thoughts and wonderful ideas about this, but there's got to be some practical consideration. I thank you for your time.
Thank you. Next, I've got three other folks in the back wish to speak. Anybody else? Come on up, please. I'll take a few more comments. It's 9:25, folks. I'm not trying to cut anybody off, but I just got to have some time for us to deliberate. Go ahead.
So you're only just getting to the people from Newtonville. I'm Captain Carol Grazer, 258 Mill Street in Newtonville, and I'd like to ask that you please deny a zoning change and a special permit to the petitioner. The project as proposed will mostly benefit the petitioner and his associates and will impose tremendous burdens on our community. This project is a little bit like a bag of Jell-O. Like, it keeps getting pushed around, up, down, back, here, but it's still the same mass. Even with 10 fewer units, it's still the same mass. It's still too big. It's still too tall and too big. All of the improvements, and particularly the new art center, all of the things that have been mentioned at previous iterations of this hearing and tonight, these are all great. They would be superb in a smaller project that fit into our village. I want to make it clear that people in Newtonville totally support affordable housing. We like affordable housing that's in scale with our village and our neighborhood. We don't like massive, overpriced, high-density projects that are expensive, masquerading as affordable housing. Most of us who live in Newton came here because we like Newton the way it is. We like the socioeconomic diversity. We like the villages. We like the single-family houses and the two-family houses, and we like the grass and the backyards and the trees. And zoning exists to protect our investments in our homes. And I believe it's your responsibility to protect our zoning and to protect your constituents. We suspect that the petitioner overpaid for the properties, and that's the risk that he took because we know that no one in this room promised him that he would get a zoning change and a special permit. So we're under no obligation to make sure that he gets it or that he gets a profit. The mayor's own housing strategy states
that there's no way that we can build ourselves to affordability. We can never build enough units to move the dial on housing affordability. So when people get up and say, oh, if we just had more housing, more housing, more housing, housing prices would go down, it really just displays a fundamental lack of understanding about housing economics. If you grant a special permit and a zoning change to this petitioner, you're unleashing the developable potential of his property. That immediately makes all the surrounding properties more valuable and more expensive. That leads to pushing up the rent, both commercial and residential, and it sets off a kind of chain reaction where even those people who have no intention of selling and like Newton the way it is and like their commercial or residential property the way it is are incentivized to sell because everything's changing around them and ruining the very ambiance that they enjoyed and thought that you were going to protect by protecting our zoning. As I've been listening to the comments about the public hearing, I've really been struck by how, you know, people just talking about these benefits without this fundamental understanding of the economics. The fiscal and the economic impacts of this projects are profoundly negative to the city, the fiscal impacts, and the economic ones are profoundly negative to the residents. The proposal is a losing proposition for Newton. All new residential development, with the exception of large houses on very large lots, all new residential development costs the municipality more in services than it yields in property taxes. And the denser the development, the more unbalanced that equation is. So if you want to get our financial house in order, if you want to have control over our planning, if you want to have funds to set aside for affordable housing or an affordable housing trust fund, the last thing you want to do is allow high-density, luxury housing that externalizes all of the costs onto the city and onto the residents, jacks up surrounding rents, leads to increased property taxes for everyone else to support the services for new residents. All of these things add into our unfunded liabilities problems because new hires means new unfunded liabilities. It doesn't make any sense. The correct model for us is sustainability. To maintain our housing stock and to build affordable housing or convert affordable housing that's in scale to our neighborhoods in the way that CanDo does it. It's not these enormous monolithic projects. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Next, please, Ms. Bruce.
Peter Bruce, Clapham Place, Newtonville. I'd like to talk about Washington Place, housing, and the common good. Thinking about common good, I was delighted reading Newton's housing strategy report to see that the city is concerned with gentrification, even if it does not name the problem that explicitly. It points out that although our housing population, or our population remains stable since 2000, 4,200 high-income households moved in, while 4,700, about a third or more, middle and working class households had to leave, households making $125,000 or less. This gentrifying change, the study largely and rightly attributes to the rapidly increasing cost of housing, which everybody, regardless of what side you're on, acknowledges is a problem. Now, while it's great that Newton values our economic diversity and wants to increase it, the policies that the administration and developers are pursuing are likely to have exactly the opposite effect. Washington Place is a perfect example. First, there are many more expensive than affordable apartments. The state's definition of affordable by that criteria, the ratio is 6 expensive to 1 affordable. If we expand to a more generous definition, the one that the developer is using, and go up to housing that's made for people earning up to $140,000 a year, then, and adding another 10%, well, we find that if you take into account the housing that will be destroyed by the demolitions, and this extra 10%, we're still back to the 6-to-1 ratio. And if you don't count that extra 10%, the ratio of affordable by the state's definition to expenses or market rate, and not including those in the middle, is 33-to-1, expensive to affordable. Kathleen just referred to luxury housing and luxury apartments. Some people might not like that definition. The Wall Street Journal usually defines luxury housing as apartments as in the top 1/5 of the income distribution. views are mostly up there. What are the prices going to be? According to the mayor's report, the housing strategy, rents for two-bedroom apartments are going to range from $3,200 to $3,800 a month. And these are from data that are now 6 months old, at least probably more like a year old. It's almost certainly going to be up around $4,000 by the time these things are built. That's two bedrooms. I don't have separate data for one bedroom for locally, but as far as an overall aggregate of rents, 70% of written rents are for less than $1,900 a month. That's from the mayor's housing report. That means that at least the two bedrooms are going to be about twice that, and the one bedrooms will be a lot more too. All this is extremely inflationary. When you increase the number of luxury apartments, it does not, just by increasing supply, drive down prices. It depends on how elastic or inelastic the demand is, how strong the demand is. And in coastal cities, from Vancouver to San Francisco to LA to New York to Boston to London, demand is very inelastic, and prices tend to go high. The more you build high-priced apartments, the more it drags up all the prices.
I'm going to ask you to wrap up if you would.
Okay, just a from the standpoint of the common good, the best way to keep housing prices affordable is to constrain the development of luxury apartments and gentrification. The most effective way to do that at Washington Place is to keep the development within the scale allowed by our current zoning. The choice of course is not between Plan A or Plan B, but to rezone or not. As members of the City of Council that we elected, I hope that we are voting against rezoning the roadblock in the interest of the common good, especially for those of us who live here. Thank you.
Thank you. It is now 9:30, and I am going to cut off public comment for this evening. We've now had public comment for over an hour and a half. I have to give some opportunity for my colleagues to deliberate. We are not going to be here at 10:30 or 11 or 11:30 tonight. But what I will do is our committee clerk stepped out for a moment, but if anybody who wanted to speak this evening but did not get an opportunity to do so, we are meeting again on the 15th. I will put you on first. I'll put you on at 7 o'clock at night so that you, if you want to come in, speak, and leave, you can do so. If you bear with me, do you know where Ms. Khan? She'll be back. She'll be back in a moment. I'm going to ask her to step outside. Anybody who wishes to speak and who did not speak this evening can sign up with Ms. Khan, and I promise you, you'll go first on the 15th. Two other things. We are going to leave the public hearing open. We're going to leave it open on the 15th, and my intent is to leave it open at least for the first meeting in January as we start our board order deliberations, because I want the public to have an opportunity to weigh in at least on the first draft of a board order, because we are going to have a board order. Whether we vote in favor of this or not, I don't know, but we are going to have some board order. Ms. Young is going to have some draft for us, I think, in January. It'll be circulated publicly. I want to make sure that the public has an opportunity to comment at least on the specific language in the draft. At that point, I am planning on closing the public hearing. We need to close at some point. I think we've had a tremendous opportunity for folks to be heard. So that's my plan in terms of public comment. I would urge you on the 15th or again in January, if you speak again, please try to do so on new or differing aspects of the project. We have heard, I welcome the commentary, it's helpful. I will say it's less helpful if we hear the same thing from the same person on whatever side of the issue two or three times. It is much more productive if you have a particular focus or something new that you want to bring to our attention. I think that's a particular aid. Of course, any and all public comment is welcome, and any written comment is welcome of any length whatsoever. Again, goes to Ms. Khan. So with that, I know Ms. Khan is going to step back in, and I don't know if she's outside or not, but when she does step back in, if you just wait for a few moments, I'll ask her to go back out. You can give it. There's Ms. Khan. Ms. Khan, I'm going to ask if you would, hold on, Ms. Young, could you just fill her in? That'd be helpful. If you haven't spoken this evening and you want to go out and just give your name to Ms. Khan, that would be most helpful. With that, I know we have a number of questions for, or at least I have a number of questions for the developer, for the planning department. Folks, you want to tee it off? Councillor Crosley.
Thank you. That was been a long evening, so I'll try to focus. Can everybody hear me? So I'll try to focus my comments.
Please, let's all try to do
a couple of technical matters first, and then I would like to make a general comment about the progress of the development as it appears to me. The most technical matter has to do with how you're calculating I&I, and I read the brief engineering report, and I don't know if other folks have noticed this, but we got this brief report on our desks, and I'd like everyone to look at it, because what our engineering department has been able to do is to actually take the rated flow from all of the water-saving devices in the project and calculate a pretty accurate flow rate. Might actually be better than this, but you know, what we do is we have an 8-to-1 ratio where we ask for a contribution to our sewer system based on that ratio, and this is doing exactly what we want it to do. We're saying to the developer, instead of using the standard engineering rates, which don't relate to what it is they're putting in the building, we already know, because they're committing to these very high efficiency water fixtures, which I'm sure we will have something in the board order to reflect, and so they're able to reduce their contribution pretty significantly right out of the gate. And I just wanted to mention that, because it's exactly what
just so I'm clear, because I want to give guidance to both planning and Patricia. Do you have any questions on the I&I calculation, or are you satisfied with it?
No, I'm totally satisfied.
Fine.
This is how I think we were expecting this. This is an incentive, and they've taken the incentive and they've run with it.
In the interest of time, if we could just continue with questions or things we want them to focus on, that'd be helpful.
The second thing, did you have something on that? Okay.
No, you finished talking. Yeah.
I'm really pleased to get the new ecology brief. Okay. There are a couple things in here, and I'm assuming that along the lines of other things you've pledged to do, that some of these things can be picked up specifically in our board order, particularly when, for example, with the building envelope, you talk about careful air barrier inspections, testing, and verification. So when there's an opportunity to for our department to receive a submittal on something that you've pledged to do along those lines, where there's real clear performance objectives that you've stated, I'd like to see those things reflected in the board order. And I'd also love to hear from my colleagues about, not now, but about what you think about this summary, because to me, it's very much going the direction, it's a meaningful, substantive summary of the measures that they're incorporating in the project.
You're talking about the sustainability summary?
Yes.
So the developer's fine. I mean,
I'm sorry?
Okay, we can get to that later, sure.
Yeah, no, I just would just like to hear from my colleagues individually about how helpful they think this is, because we haven't had, somebody hasn't done quite this for us in the past. They just talk about getting a LEED certification or something, which to me is pretty meaningless. So I'm pleased to have that. I guess what I want to say, because we're not taking comments now, is that I don't have any questions about the building or the massing or the design or the sidewalks or the transportation. I am just generally extremely pleased with how careful and responsive the design effort has been to meet the concerns that we have stated and that the community has stated. And of course, I'm going to be real clear right off the bat. I don't have any objection to the partial five-story scheme.
Okay, thank you, Councilor Auchincloss.
Two questions for the petitioner. First is about the transportation subsidy. Could you just help me enumerate the math here? So you are both charging separately for parking, and then you are offering a subsidy for the commuter or for all alternative modes of transportation, so it's actually cumulative. If you have two cars, you're going to pay for two cars, and you're going to sacrifice that subsidy,
And if you have zero cars, you're not paying for the rentals, and then you're going to get the subsidy as well. So it's a swing that's greater than just the $200.
Yes, that's correct.
Okay. Just give me the top line number for if you were going to have two cars versus zero cars, including the parking rate cost.
The top line number if you're going to have two cars, so you're saying the rental cost of parking space.
Yeah.
In other words,
yes.
We haven't determined that. What we're seeing in the marketplace is somewhere in the range of $150 to $175 per parking space.
Okay, so we're talking like almost $500 swing per month from two cars to zero cars.
Correct.
Okay, that's helpful. Second question, would you be willing to submit a, I'm not even sure what option letter we're on now, option C, that had a 171 with the additional units as a moderately, as workforce housing, and to see what the architecture and what the submission would look like under those circumstances?
So I'm sorry, just so I'm clear, 171 residential units in, I'm sorry, the change in the moderate would be?
All 10.
Saying 10% moderate?
Or all 10 additional 10 delta.
We can look at it. I think one of the pushbacks we've gotten in, as part of this public process is density, so we've tried to address that by reducing unit count. If that's something favorable to the community, we're happy to look at it.
Yeah, I think the incremental density amelioration of 171 to 161 to me does not offset the 10 additional workforce housing units we're going to get for this community. So I'd like to have that option on the table.
Yeah, and we can create the visual as well of what that would mean for additional massing so everyone's clear.
Okay.
It's just hard to hear the questions with people talking in the background as well. So
No, we'll make sure that you get the questions. Councilor Auchincloss, anything else? All set? Okay, others? Councilor Schwartz?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I want to, expand on a couple of questions, or at least ask for answers to a couple of questions that I heard in the discussions that we just heard from the public. One, and this is probably for the planning department, but I guess also for the developer, it was commented that the Lowell-Washington intersection was a potential challenge here because a lot of focus has been on the Washington-Walnut intersection. And so I'd just like to either be reminded of what you're going to do at Lowell and Washington, or if you're not planning to do anything there, why that's okay, because that's obviously a concern for many. Second, it was commented by, I believe, the speaker, who's a transportation person from Harvard, about the bike lanes and the protected bike lanes versus not protected. And I was just wondering if the planning department perhaps could get back to us on if shifting the parking out from the curb and providing a protected bike lane there is in any way possible. Is it how different is that? How unworkable is that? It seems to be the same dimensions. And just a corollary to that, and I don't know if this is probably an item for a larger discussion, but if we're looking at the Washington Street corridor down the road, and there is some work going to be done on the south side of Washington as far as the utilities and undergrounding and whether that affects the curbs, whether there's any thought that's been given to putting bike lanes along the turnpike, which would be a protected area and would have a good arterial kind of potential, much larger than this project, obviously. The alternative to that would be on the north side of Washington, whether it's the same thing with the parking, if there's any way to protect the bike lane, although I know that there's not currently a bike lane proposed on Washington at all. Third, we heard some very disturbing testimony about pedestrian safety. I know that we've seen the mock-ups of the intersection itself and the reduced distances, which is terrific. I just think that having heard what happened to that couple, I'm even more interested in how effective that might be at alleviating that problem, or if there are other considerations that should be taken into account. So I just want to make sure that we're reducing those distances as much as we can, and any retiming of the lights taking into account the pedestrian safety concerns.
You know, Councilor Schwartz, we're going to have DPW here on the 15th, and I'm going to ask Ms. Anand to specifically convey those concerns to the commissioner. The commissioner is going to be presenting that night, is that correct? Or Mr. Mark, one of the two? Okay. So we'll have someone relatively senior, or the most senior person in the department, to present, but I want to make sure those questions get posed. Go ahead, I'm sorry.
No, and I would also echo Councillor Auchincloss's question about the workforce and the extra 10, because that dovetails with, I think, a question that we all have to be asking ourselves when we come to the zoning change, which is really a policy question and not specific to this particular petition, and that is, as has been mentioned, by making the zoning change, what we're doing is we are allowing significantly more units of housing than would currently be allowed under the current zoning. And in doing so, we're not only potentially creating a lot of costs of services and other costs to the city, but we're also giving up some tax, commercial tax basis, as has been mentioned. So in light of that giving of relief or giving up of tax benefits to the city, do we feel that the benefits are enough to warrant that? And one of the benefits, obviously, that's been mentioned a lot, and I think a lot of people in the community, as well as the developers, seem to be in favor of, is affordability. Are we getting enough affordability to make that zoning change appropriate? And so I think that the comment about workforce housing, if you can fit 10 more, that's one way of looking at it. Another is if you can increase the affordable, you know, the lower affordability group as well. So I just would ask that. I do want to say that I feel encouraged by the amount of public benefits that have been already proposed, and I do want to give credit to the developer for being so responsive and thinking outside the box. And I was really struck today by the, I had not heard about it before, but the Newton Arts Center proposal. I think that's a wonderful way of helping that group, as well as bringing some vitality to the community center. And I think that's a huge benefit. But I do think that it's our duty to ask the perhaps more difficult questions as to, are we getting enough for the potential benefits to developers for the zone change?
Okay. Others, I have some questions. Others, Councilor Norton?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I wanted to start first with a question for Alexandra. So I don't have my notes with me, and I couldn't find your memo on our Friday packet. So this is going from memory, but with the current zoning, are you saying that that any housing would be required to have at least, the units would have to be at least 1,200 square feet, no matter the square footage of the development?
No, I'm not saying that. The zoning requires a certain amount of land area per unit. So, I don't know how to explain it in another way, but a certain amount of lot size or dedicated land per each residential unit. It has nothing to do with the unit sizes themselves. It's the land attributable to this development dictates the number of units that could be built there.
So if the development were smaller, could the units be smaller?
I think the answer is yes.
I mean, they can always be smaller.
But that's not the way the memo was written. That's why I'm asking. I mean, maybe I'm being sick, but I think my job is to ask questions. I just wanted to... I don't understand. I'm telling you I don't understand.
Maybe... Can I try to jump in and perhaps rephrase? Because I had a similar question, Councilor Norton, so I do want to understand. I think the statement earlier was, if in this current zone, you could put 107 residential units on this piece of land, correct?
103, yes.
103.
Right.
And there would be no limit on the amount of business space or commercial space on that land. Is that right as well?
So the overall SAR allowed would limit the number of square footage that can be built, and that, of course, does not count for the amount of parking that would be
built. All right, but let's just, may I, Councilor Norton, because I want to try to play this out. We have three buildings here, okay? You break it out. Let's assume one of the buildings went to all commercial or office,
mm-hmm.
and you went to four stories, just as a presumption. Would you be able then to get at the 107 units that you talked about?
As long as the total SAR stays within the allowable range, yes.
Okay, so I think, does that help address your, that addresses my concern a little bit, or at least answers the question of Councilor Norton. If it doesn't, please probe.
I'll follow to be late. I mean, I would just have a table.
I understand the question.
I think we ought to follow. This is a very important question, and so let's try to take a moment for some clarity here. I want to make sure the question's clear enough so Ms. Anand can answer it, because if we're talking at each other, that's not good, and I don't want to have an offline conversation on this. So go ahead. Do you want to give it a shot?
No.
All right. You want me to try?
Yes.
Alright.
Because I feel like I did and I don't know.
So, the statement was made earlier that you could have no more than 103 residential units on this parcel because of the amount of square footage on the ground, correct?
Because of the minimum required land area per unit. Yeah.
Okay. But that applies only to residential. That does not apply to commercial or office.
It doesn't apply in terms of the number of units.
Okay.
But you still have to add the total gross square footage that would be built on the site. So you would have, you'd have to add the residential unit gross square footage plus any commercial or office. And that would be regulated by the FAR, not the lot area per unit requirement.
Could you do this for us, and maybe this will help, for our next meeting? Could you, if we took this project as is but went to four stories, let's just assume we went to four stories,
mm-hmm.
okay, and we went down to 107 residential units
mm-hmm.
of varying mm-hmm. sizes, you know, some 600 square feet, some 800 square feet, some three bedrooms.
So I could take an average unit size.
Whatever.
Yep.
But we converted the rest of the construction to commercial.
The rest of the FAR.
Could we do this project as proposed for the type of development with a different mix? I think that's what I'm
driving. The answer is yes. You could do
okay.
it a million different ways. This is the current proposal in front of us. But there's a cap of a certain amount of square footage, say 300,000 square feet, 250,000 square feet. You can divide that however you want among commercial or residential units, so long as the total doesn't exceed both the max square footage allowed and the number of units allowed under the lot area per unit requirement.
And is that residential units or any unit?
Residential only. So
okay.
I think maybe what you're asking is, do you have to back out the amount of commercial space before you can calculate the residential units? Is that...
I guess I'm looking for under what conditions could one have smaller than 1,200 square foot units, because I am interested in seeing smaller units.
So that cannot happen under the business zone, because that requirement to go under the 1,200 square foot per unit size in the business zone is not waivable. But it is waivable in the mixed use zone. So there's an allowable incentive to have more density.
Wait a minute. Are you saying that the average square footage of a residential unit in the business zone has to be 1,200 square feet?
No.
Okay.
I'm not talking at all about the unit size, just the lot area per unit.
Okay, but I think what Councilor Norton is getting at, and frankly I'm getting at as well, is the argument we've heard for conversion is we're not going to get enough small units unless we convert to mixed use four. And what I hear being said is, we could get all very small units in the current zone, but we'd be capped at 103 or 107 total residential units.
Exactly.
That's not what I heard just now. It would be so helpful to have this written down, like at a fourth grade level. you know, for someone who doesn't have a background in this, because this is really important, and if I don't understand it, I guarantee there's got to be at least one person in the public who doesn't understand it.
Okay.
There are much brighter people than I, but
I
don't
understand my guess is half our colleagues won't either.
Wait, that wasn't done. That was just my question.
No, go ahead, and then I'm going to get... Councilor Schwartz, do you want to jump in on this issue? If you don't mind, Councilor Norton, then just trying to get some help here.
At the risk of repeating, but I think concretize it for all of us. My understanding is that you got under the business two or whatever it is, you got 103 total max, because that's the land area divided by 103 equals 1,200. No less. Can't go.
1,200 square feet.
Right, fine. Yeah. Fine. Same way. Division. But the actual average square area of the living units
could be any size.
Totally different from 1,200. It could be 5 square feet. But you couldn't sell those, so it has to be a little bigger.
Right.
But if the average were, let's say, 600 square feet, 900 square feet, that's fine as long as you don't go over 103 units.
Yes.
Or 107 if the chairman's counting.
A lot of the unit does not regulate size of
the
unit.
And the point that Alexander was making is that you can't just go to an affinity of commercial space. You'd be limited to the total of those, the square area of those units, plus the commercial would not be able to go above 2, FAR of 2.
So could you tell us then how much residential square footage you could put in a B2 zone as currently exists, and how much commercial you could put in on this site so you're within FAR?
It's going to be a varying function of what the square footage is.
Yeah, I can give you an approximation.
It doesn't have to be exact. Yeah. I think we're just looking at approximations because we're having a fundamental, it seems to me, a fundamental discussion, at least among some of us, as to the mix here of residential versus commercial. We're being suggested to change to a mixed-use four so we can have a greater mix of residential in this mix. I mean, that's what I think we're hearing. Not the size of the units. I think we have to get away from the size of the units and talk about the number of units on this site, given that it's a relative, even though it seems large, relatively small, say, compared to the Northland project. Go ahead.
Just the final point is that you could still go to an MU4 and not have an average that's anywhere close to 1,200.
That's right.
It would just be, you'd be able to have more than 103 units, which might be more saleable for the developer to be able to make this work.
Right. But then there are other arguments that the mix use for this.
Okay, but that's a policy. I mean, I think the planning department has provided us with a very clear view of what it thinks is appropriate here, but we now, I think, we really need to get the facts, and I think if you can assist us in that, that will be most helpful, so we're all at least talking on the same language and the same page, and I hope this has been very helpful to me, so if you could put in like a paragraph or two paragraphs for us, that would be helpful.
Yes.
Councilor Norton, you want to follow up?
Yes, thank you so much. I appreciate that. Just a few comments and then requests for the developer on the new iteration. I think the appearance along Washington Place is much better, much more attractive. I think the details on the fifth story, as Alexandra pointed out, are much better. I think keeping everything at least 90 feet from Foster Street is a huge improvement, I'm sure, to the folks on Foster Street. And I love the creative thinking on the transportation subsidy pilot. Obviously, I'll want to keep pushing to see the best we can do. I did reach out to someone from the Livable Streets Alliance who told me that the Eden Properties, that's trying to develop 89 Brighton Ave, is looking at offering hubway passes and key passes for residents on an ongoing basis. That's not a done deal, but something they're looking at, and I know that key passes are cheaper than commuter rail passes, but I just wanted to pass that along. Concerns I still have. I am troubled that the project is not a better financial deal for the city. We saw in a presentation by Marlene Lemieux not that long ago that everything we're doing right now is not enough to close the gap on our unfunded liabilities, and commercial revenue is our best bet to do that aside from an override. At our October 7th meeting, I did make a few points that I'm going to make again.
love to see you do the fifth-story detail on a fourth-story and keeping it to four-story. So I'm gonna make that request again. This is why I'm getting at this question about the mix of units. I would love to see more smaller units so that they are more naturally affordable. We heard from the audience tonight, for folks who don't live in the area, this is where I live, there are many more affordable units than people realize in that area. On my street, there's a three-bedroom that goes for $2,100. There are one-bedrooms around the corner that go for $1,000 and $1,200. They're not fancy. They're not going to have the granite countertops, but people live in them, and they're totally decent. So I am very persuaded by the arguments that people are making about the risk to everyone in the area from putting $3,000 to $4,000 a month apartments there. And then lastly, about the affordable mix, one of the speakers brought this up, and I brought it up last time. According to the RKG Associates report, we don't have the gap with the workforce housing. Where we have the gap is the 30% AMI and the 50% AMI, so I'd really love to see what more you could do there rather than the workforce.
So I just got a few questions. Ms. Anand, and if I asked you this last time, forgive me. You talked about the shadow studies and the distance on Walnut Street being, I think you said, not shadow studies, you said it was 60 feet. You used that as a benchmark for justifying the five stories. Did I misunderstand?
The height, not the height. Shadow studies, yeah.
The height. And that's what Walnut Street is more than 50 feet currently and will remain more than 60 feet.
Right, Walnut Street is around 60 feet, actually a little bit wider.
Okay, so that's why, basically 12 feet for every story is kind of the benchmark, is that mm-hmm. the understanding? Okay, I just want to make sure I understood that's helpful. Second, there was a $1 million number thrown out there for the developer soap improvements. Is that million, I want to be clear, is that $1 million number going into all the street improvements and all the other things and reallocate it as we see fit, or is the developer committing to do this and this and this and this on the street and adding the extra $1 million?
So the quick answer is they are committed to doing the intersection work regardless outside of $1 million. Then they would like to put a total cap on other improvements of $1 million.
Okay, so I want to be really clear with the intersection work. Is that includes narrowing the roadway, all the pedestrian stuff, the bike lanes, the traffic lights, everything? Is that right, Attorney Bookbinder?
So some of that work is not just at the intersection, so they want to separate out.
Well, I want to know exactly what for next time, okay? You don't have to provide us with a full answer now. But I want to know very clearly what you're committing to pay for in addition, leaving aside $1 million. So if you can, and if you can outline that in a two-paragraph memo.
It was all in the presentation tonight. So that one sheet that showed every benefit before I got to $1 million is not included, and everything on the sheet that shows $1 million, thank you. So this are the only items that are not included in $1 million. I'm sorry, these would be the only items for $1 million. Everything else is included separate as part of the project. So we're committed to everything else.
But I want to see in writing, again, if we could, paragraph, two paragraphs, exactly what the commitment is. I think you've done it.
Yeah.
So it's the sidewalk increase, the sidewalk increase, the sidewalk reductions, the signalization upgrades.
The lead, the public plaza, the affordability, the decoupling, the ride sharing, bike lanes.
So who's going to be doing all that work?
We will be doing that work.
And how is that acceptable to DPW and planning?
Yes, it will be very coordinated, and DPW will speak about that at the next meeting.
I'd like at the next meeting to have a much better sense of how that's going to play out, and I'd like DPW to give us some examples of how that's been done, if it has, by other developers, mm-hmm. And how that's worked and how we can ensure that we're getting what we want and you know, all those types of things, the types of signalization, because I'm sure there'll be some very significant consequences in terms of certain things it may or may not do. I want to know who's going to make the decisions in those. Is it going to be you? Is it going to be us? What if there's disagreement? We ought to be very clear about that. The $1 million then you're proposing for all the other stuff, and you're suggesting that we decide how that money gets spent? Okay. And how did you come up with $1 million, Ms. Anand?
They have come up with it as a total cap, and then I think we need to make conditions in the board order that prioritize allocation.
Well, so that was their proposal. Was there any, I mean, they're throwing out numbers. Don't get me wrong, we're not complaining about an offer, but if there's a willingness to pay up to $1 million improvements, was there some negotiation or discussion about making it $1.2 million or $1.4 million or $1.6 million?
No.
I realize, and Ms. Young is going to remind us of what we can and can't do permissibly, and I want to be exceptionally careful about it, and we're doing it publicly for a reason, because I want everybody in the public, and I want the council to hear what we're doing. We're not going to do this in the back room, but I want to know how we do that and what the proper procedure is for that.
Well, as this committee knows, and I hope the public understands, that in Massachusetts, the ability of municipalities to extract funds or other sorts of in-kind donations, not donations, but requirements as part of a land use permit are very, very limited. And so you essentially are in a situation where you can identify those areas that require or would benefit from mitigations that are caused by the impact of the project itself, and then see how the developer wants to come forward in terms of addressing those needs for mitigation that are created by the impact. But you don't get into a room and start saying, how about giving me 150?
And that's fair, and I appreciate the reminder. So can you provide us with some information about what mitigation was suggested by the planning department for this project? And don't have to do it now, but it's for our next meeting, so we all can understand what the planning department thinks are the costs of this project and what might be appropriate for mitigation of those costs. We can evaluate the proposal. Councillor Crosley.
On this point, a lot of us, I think, were very interested when the developer was actually illustrated a proposal to develop the bridge and to make that connection a real connection back to Newtonville. So I understand the DPW is coming to talk with us. I understand there needs to be coordination between you. I understand there's cost differentials. If the DPW, I don't know if they can be, but it would be great if they could be fairly specific about what parts of that work they could take on maybe less extensively and use the donation toward it versus other things. It just seems to me whatever's involved in making that bridge a real connection as much as possible, given what it is, to the rest of Newtonville would be a huge benefit. And I'm not sure that the rest of it fits within $1 million. I don't really have a sense of how much that is worth.
And I think that would be very helpful information for us. Again, I want to be very mindful of Attorney Young's very appropriate advice, and I'll just speak for all of us. We're going to be exceptionally careful to do it right. Go ahead, Councilor Schwartz.
I just don't want to create extra work, and I think that I had heard, perhaps that is after the Newtonville Neighborhood Area Council had kind of not been in favor of some bridge changes, but that was becoming less of an issue. I don't know if the Ward 2 councilors want to help us with that, but I don't want to send us down a road that's already been trodden.
Well, I have two of Ward 2 colleagues here, Councilor Norton and Auchincloss.
Thank you, Councilor Schwartz. So, yeah, I do want to respond that with limited dollars, particularly when I'm trying to slash the project down, just kidding, I don't think there was interest in doing bridge improvements. That's what I heard, and that's why we haven't really seen that discussed recently. People are concerned about the noise on the bridge, so I think people like other benefits better, and I think the area council had made that clear.
Councilor Auchincloss, do you want to add to that? Okay. Well, I want to be mindful of not creating extra work unnecessarily. If you can you know, with an hour or so of work to try to provide some information to Councilor Clarkley, I think that would be helpful. But if it's going to be more than, you know, really a minimal amount, would you check in with me, please? Because I just don't want to see us go off, and I want to be mindful of providing information, but I'm also sensitive to the workload. Okay. I'm going to leave it just a couple of quick observations. I want to thank the petitioner for, I think, trying to take some comments that were made here in terms of the roofing, for example, in particular, the corner area. I think you've heard from a lot of people, they think that's a really an improvement architecturally. Appreciate the sensitivity in terms of sidewalks being moved back, the attention to some detail in terms of the layout. I will just leave for the record once again, and I said this before, but I'm going to say it publicly, I remain extremely concerned about the commercial office / residential balance of this project. 40,000 of commercial, 200 plus thousand, or nearly 200,000, I should say, of residential, in a business district where we don't have a lot of business districts in the city. I've made my views known on that. I think my questions with Councilor Norton made clear my concerns, but I remain very concerned about that, and, you know, we'll go from there. All right. Other questions, comments from my colleagues? Seeing none, it's a little later than our usual hour. We adjourn. We start at 7 o'clock on the 15th, and I promise we start off with the people who did not get to speak this evening. Thank you all very much.